Ready? Thank you, Patty. And we will call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting at 8:54 on the clock for January 18th, 2017. And we'll start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is posted on the east wall. Attendance by observation, Juergens Hill, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. The Consent Agenda. General Agenda to approve the minutes of the meeting held January 4th, 2017. Approve all claims through January 18th, 2017 in the amount of $567,809.80, except claim number 17010119 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $887.50 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence receive. Approve register of deeds fees report and district court summary fee report for the month of December 2016. Approve Diane Vickers to replace Mark Engler on the Gage County Visitors Committee for term ending 6 of 2021. Approve receiving county audit for fiscal year ending 6/30/16 and place on file. Approve 2016 annual noxious weed report and having chairman sign report. Approve specs and call for bids on fuel for the county. Bids to be opened on February 15th, 2017 at 9 a.m. On the consent agenda, I know Mark has come here, and Mark maybe wanted to talk a little bit about we're going to approve placing Diane Vickers there on the visitors committee. Mark called me and talked to me about if you'd like to come forward, Mark, and make comments once. There's a reason why he's no longer can be a voting member on that committee.
Good morning, everyone. And I guess I asked for the change because of new interpretation, understanding of our ethic rules and regulations. While I'll still participate by attending those visitor committee meetings, I just will not vote. So, anyway, it's best that I step aside.
Step aside as a voting member,
as a voting member, right.
And stuff. So, yes. So. It's more of a, I don't know, maybe a clerical, not a clerical, something that we needed to do to follow guidelines, yeah, and stuff. So, and then Diane Vickers, Lisa did talk to her, and she agreed to be the voting member on there and now. So, any other questions for Mark about that or
Myron?
Yeah,
no question. But my opinion, as long as I've been on the visitors committee, I believe Mark's been on there. I don't know how many years has it been that you've been on there, Mark? You know.
Since the late 90s.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
And I thought it was 57, 58 years.
but Mark has been really essential to, you know, I think everybody that's come and gone in that office over there. Mark has done an excellent job on that board, and he's been an important piece, and I think he's an important piece to our community with what he does with the homestead. And I hope that you know how appreciated that is.
Yes. Oh,
thank you, Gary. Thank
we
you.
We appreciate you being on there, and if you would have just left, then I think we'd have been a little more upset. But we appreciate you wanting to continue to serve on there and help.
Gary said everything I told him to say, so that's a very, very good thing. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks.
Lisa, did you want to comment on it or nothing, or no? You just other than okay. Then the other one is here. After our meeting on Friday, John and I had a little discussion, and I said, well, Terry wasn't here, but I said, geez, Terry always wants to open fuel bids on Valentine's Day, so if we needed to get that put it out for specs for bids now. And so I called Galen and Don and see if that would work, so we put that on here to call for bids again for fuel, and Galen will have those similar to the last couple of years, probably the quantities and that. And everything. So that's we'll put that out so that then we can advertise it and still get it done and in by February 15th. We'll open those bids and see if we want to approve them or not. So that's something that I think that's worked well for the county in the respect that we then know what a good share of our cost is going to be for the year. We've been locking that in and haven't had to occur some of the increases that have happened during the summer months sometimes and stuff. So anything else for the consent agenda?
On the fuel bids, Galen, what was the prices that we set last year? Do you remember? Don't worry about it. We'll get it another later. Don't worry about it.
Later.
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion by Byers and seconded by Thiemann. Discussion? Vote? 6-0 in favor. Regular agenda. Approver, entertain a motion to approve or disapprove claim number 17010119 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $887.50. Total dollar amount of claim approved through January 18, 2017 is $568,697.30.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, seconded by Hill. Discussion. This is a company that Team and Eric is involved with. Vote. Okay, 5 in favor with Team and abstaining. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda. Oh, hold it. Before we get to that, we do have a timed event, but should we go to the timed event first? We have a timed event on our agenda for Veterans Honor at 9 o'clock for Melvin Winkle, and I'll call Phil up to...
Good morning. It's my pleasure this morning to introduce our Honored Veteran of the Month. He's... Melvin Winkle. He spent a lot of time or most of his life in Gage County. He's got a long history of veterans in his family, including his wife, who's also a veteran. He's done a lot of helping veterans since he's got out of the service. He drove our van, driving veterans back and forth from appointments up in Lincoln and Omaha over the years, and he's also working right now, even as we speak, on the Veterans Memorial Park in Pickerel also. So I'll get started here. Melvin joined the United States Navy on August 25th, 1950, and was discharged on June 16th, 1954. He served in the Korean Theater of Operations. He earned the National Defense Service Medal, United Nations Service Medal, China Service Medal Extended, the Korean Service Medal with 2 Bronze Stars. At this time, I'd like to introduce Melvin Winkle.
Well, first, I'd like to thank the board for inviting the veterans up to see you once a month. I think it's a good thing for us. I see if my supervisor's not here today.
No, Matt wasn't able to make it
Matt's
today.
Matt's not here today. First, I'd like to pass this medal around. It was received on the honor flight to Washington. You read the back of it, it'll tell you about it. It's really an honor. I spent most of my time training sonar students for 2 years. Then I went aboard a destroyer and went to Korea. There, we went to the Far East around the Wonsan Harbor, which was on the 38th parallel of Korea, until the end of the war. Our duties included bombardment, blocking, and patrolling. The ship received heavy damage on 2 occasions with some personal casualties. Then, in August of 53, The conflict in Korea was settled, and I was there, so I take credit for ending that conflict. So then we returned to the United States, and I was discharged in 1954. And as Phil has said, since retirement, I've volunteered for, 920 hours of driving the VA the van back and forth to Lincoln and Omaha, and over 600 hours of the Honor Guard, and as he mentioned, the memorial in Pickerel, which we just got started. And so if you got any loose change in your pocket, well, we'll take it. That's going to be going on from Well, let's see. It started now for the funds, and it'll go for another year before we have it. We hope to have it done. I did bring some pictures, but I don't think you need them. This is a picture of my brothers and sisters. There was nine of us total in the service.
That many served in the service?
Yeah, nine of us. Yeah. Wow. And here's just me at 20 years old.
Look exactly the same, Melvin.
I'm 87 years old, so I'm about ready to give up some of this stuff. But I appreciate being here. And
the county, we appreciate very much what you and other veterans have done for our country.
We're glad to do it, and it was an honor to do it. And I didn't think I was going to get out of Gage County, but then I did see the Far East, and I got paid for it.
You did. But what I find since we've done this, and I don't know, 2-3 years or whatever, the amazing stories that some of you have, but also I'm so impressed by the amount of people that Gage County has had in the service. When you look at some of the records and other things, Gage County over the years has had a lot of people that have done military service.
Yes.
And I think that speaks volumes for the county.
Yeah, they're probably just about like my service. I'm just one of them, and the ones that didn't come back is the heroes anyway.
Yeah, and we appreciate very, very much what you have done for us and for our country, and this is just a little token of our thank you.
Well, I thank you.
Yep. He's volunteered what?
As a poll worker, so he's
Melvin's also doing a poll worker for Dawn?
You have?
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
A lot of... volunteering. I get a lot of volunteers. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate that very much, too. Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
And we do have a little token of appreciation.
Yeah. On behalf of the county, I would like to have you accept these small tokens of our appreciation. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
They want a picture there, too. Hold it. Stand there a little bit.
Get your picture. Thank you.
Yeah.
Looks like a platter.
Thank you very much, Melvin. We appreciate what you've done for the county and for the country very much. Next on the agenda is comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Okay. Any comments from the public at this time? If not, we'll move on to committee reports, building and grounds and winter light.
Okay, just wanted to make a note that we had a question on where the Wymore buildings fell under our, whether it fell under building and grounds or not, and it does. So it's under our committee, and we'll be. Dave has spent a lot of time down there, but I'll be spending some more time too, as will John. So
I was going to say. So I've been working on those bid specs. I was going to ask Galen if he could help me through the technical stuff. Okay. Do you guys want me to send copies to your committee too?
Good. Yes.
All right.
Be good. And anything else, Dave? What else do you have right now?
No new news. Last at the committee reports, I did say that our boiler for the heated ramp was not working. We did get the elements in, but it, for some reason, even though it has glycol in it, it did freeze up a little, so we're waiting for these warm days for it to get going again. So luckily, we're having some nice weather now.
Yes.
So that is a safety concern, so I'm trying to get that going as soon as we can.
And we'll have more reports from the sheriff on the sheriff's department later in the agenda. So. Thank you for all you do. Dave was out here working when it's his day off. He's out treating our sidewalks and making sure that everything around this building is adequate and safe. And thank you, Dave.
And we did decide to open late Tuesday, yesterday morning, and we visited with Dave and Gus and Don and other people, Gary, about to do that. And we just decided for safety reasons that we could open 2 hours late. So thank you, Dave. Equalization.
Nothing.
Finance and insurance.
I'll just go through the list like I normally do.
of the larger expense was. We have Beatrice Area Solid Waste Agency, an annual fee from the county for $26,496. Region 5 Systems, $12,813. Butler, Gautler, and O'Brien Professional Legal Services, $18,780. NMC Exchange, Greater Blades, $45,384. John will talk more about that, about individual pricing on that later on in Road and Bridge. Sapp Brothers, Fuel and Oil, $12,969. Cypress, Employee Health Insurance Premiums, $48,581. Gage County Health Insurance, $21,789. And City of Beatrice, a nice sum of $45,911. 911 service.
I believe that's quarterly payment of our agreement with them. Anything else for finance? We'll talk about it a little later when we open our bids, too. I did talk about to Matt just a little bit about those proposed culverts and how much we had budgeted and stuff, but we'll talk about that a little later, too, when that comes up in an agenda item. So, human resource, employee relations.
We continued to talk some on the Highway Department call-out policy. We didn't reach any conclusions there. We're going to maybe look a little broader scope there, and we talked about the extension office position again.
And we have both of those on our agenda here for discussion later a little later. So we will, I don't know if we'll reach a conclusion, but at least we'll have a discussion here on our agenda later. Law enforcement emergency management.
A lot of what we had discussion on, it looks like we'll be talking later on. I don't think there's really a whole lot else. Carla,
I don't see Carla on there otherwise, though, to talk about her.
She's on there.
Oh, she is? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm overlooking it then.
Should be.
Okay.
Yes, she is.
So we'll have you on there later to talk about the program. Yep. Okay. Nope. Road and Bridge. Okay. Ow. Didn't look up high enough. Road and Bridge.
We discussed the bids are coming in on the Ellis Blacktop for that culvert project. Discussed there's a bridge that is going to transfer ownership from the county to the city that's right north of BSTC at the end of the Blacktop coming out of Beatrice on Hoyt Street. Ross Steppens with Rush Creek has talked with Galen about the Barnston Quarry that they now own and thinking that they have some good rock down there now. Galen had handouts of the County Bridge Manage Program, and Gage County did get awarded for three. One of them is a box culvert, and one of them, a couple of them are culverts. The state is paying 55% of those up to $150,000, and the county share is 45%. So that project did get accepted. We discussed the 1 and 6 year plan. Galen had handouts for us and what's in them. And then the Highway Department had that $45,384 from NMC, which was for Greater Blades. And the Greater Blades are each approximately $94 a piece, which takes two and they wear out pretty quick.
The township will be involved in that throughout the year. They will pay. They will come in and get them, and then they get billed, and they pay for the ones they use, too. But then the township can get in on that, too, and that's all state bids. Anything else?
Myron, just a quick question. There were three projects, Galen, that were awarded to us for culvert.
I think that's the way I wrote it. We got awarded. Galen can talk. You come on up here, Galen. But that's supposed to be 3 miles north of Odell. There's a bridge that we got awarded. That's the way I wrote it. Not Galen knows.
One or three.
Okay.
Yes, Gage County actually was awarded one box culvert. When we put this together, Gage County was the host county for two other counties also. So we, the engineer submitted three projects, one for Gage County, one for Nemaha, and one for Johnson. Johnson and Nemaha were also awarded their box culvert projects. The other projects that Gage County had turned in was actually two big culvert sites, and we did not receive any of the two culvert sites on that.
I noticed a couple of those culverts in question on the PWF have been sleeved. How did that go?
We haven't got the sleeves in. We'll do that this spring. We looked at it.
There was something, extensions maybe I saw on them then.
Yeah, we got the ones that we could put extensions on. Okay. We did get extensions put on those.
All right. Okay.
So, the way that looks, it looks like we got approved for three of them.
Oh, but we got one.
I should have wrote a little more than that. We got approved 3 miles north of Odell. There's a bridge that we did get approved for. So that, and I believe that the design had to be done for those or whatever.
The estimate for what would go in there, and if I remember right, that one's going to be triple 10 by 10 box culvert. Estimated cost around $200,000.
So the state will pick up 55% up to $150,000. So they will participate in that, and that should decrease quite a bit that cost to the county.
Yes.
So definitely will be a benefit to us, and now we can go ahead and get that finalized, put out for bids and stuff.
Yeah, they'll probably be sending out an agreement. The state will be here shortly.
The state will. So Galen will be in contact with them how we go forward with that. So, no, thank you for questioning that and clarifying it, because, when you look at that, it looked like we got approved for three of them, but no, that's 3 miles north of Odell. We got approved for one. We have a timed event at 9:30. Anything else for Road and Bridge? Nope. If not, we will move on then to Lee Thiemann, present the 2016 Annual Public Defenders Report. You're here. I kept looking around and
I didn't want to try to find too much space there.
I'll pass.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
Basically, just going to go through the numbers for 2016. As you see on the first page, I'm kind of just laying out the statistics by quarter and type of case, and then have a comparison to last year. And actually had the exact same number of cases, including felonies, as last year. And then on the second year, I've got prior 10-year comparison and just kind of showing an average. For the most part, nothing too outstanding as far as any particular area other than felonies is obviously still high. not the highest we've had, but certainly higher than the average. And juveniles are a little bit, obviously, highest number we've had in a while, but I think a lot of that is just from truancies, because I think we've had a lot of truancy issues. But I know Mr. Harris kind of talked to me the other day about they've got a program that they're working on to try to take care of truancies outside of court, so hopefully that'll cut down on that. But for the most part, numbers are pretty much on average or a little above average for the 10 years, but not too different from the past few years. Felony cap-wise, I know I had talked about that, I think, last year. We're about maintaining with the felony cap issue. It's actually a little bit low right now. I'm under cap right now. So, but that's kind of a comes and goes. As you can see, it kind of is one of those where it tends to be towards the end of the year, the felonies, our felony appointments go down most of the time because the cap is in play. But that's not something we have a whole lot of control over. That just depends on who's getting arrested and at what point and where we're at with our cap. But As far as our office, just so you guys are all aware, I had Kyle Manley was an attorney with our office, and he was kind of assisting with doing, he was doing about 25% of the public defender caseload. He has taken a new job up in Lincoln as of the first week of December with the state of Nebraska. So as it stands right now, I'm doing most of, if not all of, the public defender cases, but Steph Clark, who's been doing this for many years before me, she's available if I have, if I'm getting kind of maxed out to where I feel like I need to send some her way, she's willing to do those, and she's also able to cover for me if I've got conflicts with schedules and those kind of things. So right now I'm kind of handling pretty much all of it. We haven't really decided for sure as to whether we're going to try to hire another attorney or not. Right now I'm thinking if I can maintain it, handle the caseload and the scheduling issues, we're thinking it's just simpler to just have me handle it. Just that way we're not having to waste time training somebody new and hoping that they'll stick around. Obviously, with a smaller community, it's hard to attract somebody. So, but Mr. Nelson, James Nelson, our senior partner, he's also volunteered to chip in if I needed him. But for the most part, he's got a lot of other things going on. But I don't know if anyone has any questions. This is kind of our, you know,
I've got just a provide question, the I stats. I know sure. You probably answered it before. These, when you're listing each of these quarters, these are new cases that come about?
These are new appointments, yeah. So basically, it's we just keep track of it the January through March. And as you can see, it's kind of, it can be varied. And, you know, obviously, it depends on when people are getting arrested or when juveniles are getting cited for things. And obviously, we do have conflicts every once in a while, too. We've got a co-defendant situation where we're representing one guy and another guy was involved. We can only handle one side of that, but yeah, trying to break it down by quarters, just to kind of show it throughout the year. The probation violations, as you can see, that's starts off at the beginning of the year and then it kind of tails off, but that's about it. I don't know if you have any other questions. All righty, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Entertain a motion to place on file report.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, seconded by Thiemann to place on file our public 2016 annual public defenders report. Vote 6-0 in favor. Well, Thiemann, yeah, 6-0 in favor. Thank you, Lee.
Myron, could we back up a little bit to Roden Bridge?
Yeah.
On one item. Galen, with this Project North Odell that I see, that box culvert, I mean, those aren't an overnight thing to fix, and 112 is going to be closed basically all summer. And if that's closed, that means both those thoroughfares through there are going to be closed. I mean, does that work?
You've got the eclipse coming, too.
Yeah. For an extended period of time, not for just a couple weeks, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'll have to talk with Mark on this because it still has to be designed and everything, so I don't know when that date may be.
Might be late fall then.
It could possibly be,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
Well, I mean, it'd have to be put out for bids and everything.
Has to be bid and everything, yes.
The county will still handle basically the whole project like we would a normal project as far as designing and bidding and all of that.
Yes.
Okay, so that might be...
No, that's a good point. So that's something to be very much aware of so that the state isn't closing down Highway 112 here and we close down that one.
I mean, the tentative start date was April, May on that 112.
Next year.
This year.
We're moving that up. But it depends on, too, how they're going to design or how they're going to do that, if they're going to have a flagger or if they're going to shed it down, you know, or whatever. So.
Yeah.
But that will, because when they put this bridge in north of, or there are these culverts in North Odell, that road will have to be closed.
Yep. Yes.
I guess, Myron, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yes, we will.
Myron?
Yeah.
Is this the time we can talk about the road that was reconstructed, or is that later in Midland, privately reconstructed road?
Oh, that's later, yeah. Or some other time, yeah. You mean TP Road? Talk about that. No, so far we've been handling that in closed session, that TP Road and stuff. So, because that's Midlands Township and stuff. So, yeah. Unless you had a question, if you had a question that we can sure do in public, then we're more than fine and stuff. Because there's some negotiations going on there that require closed session.
Yep.
Yep. Lisa Wiegand to present the tourism quarterly report.
Guys, hello. Great for you. Yes, of this here.
I see that.
Yay. I think you have your quarterly report that I gave you, but this is on a happy note, and so I just want to share some exciting things to you. One of the first jobs that I had was to help them put together this guide, and this basically sells all of Gage County. So, I think we're going to have more reprinted probably before the eclipse comes in, all of our guests coming in. But this is kind of a really exciting year for Gage County and also for Nebraska because lots of exciting things happening. Nebraska is 150 years old. The homestead is 101 years old, right, Mark?
The National Park Service.
The National Park Service, correct. National, so there's a celebration there. We've got Blue Springs that's going to be 160 years old. And we have Beatrice that's 160 years old, too. So those are exciting times for Gage County. And we also have six events in Nebraska or in here in Gage County, which are claimed as official 150 events. So those events will be Spring National Races, which are coming up here in March 9th and 10th. Everything's looking good and favorable for lots of cars coming in for that. We've got Cortland Fest, which is June 17th. Homestead Days is an official Nebraska 150 event. That's June 23rd through 25th. Gage County Fair, that was established as an official 150. And the Blue Springs Celebration, that'll be the car show and so forth. That'll be August 20th. And then we end it with, so far, the countywide eclipse celebration, which is an official 150. So counties can still, or communities can still reach out and apply for these 150 official events anytime that they want to. So my job right now is trying to reach out to some of those communities because it's free advertising, basically, and the opportunity to promote. We have taken, as far as Gage County Tourism, has taken every opportunity of some of these free things that are out there for Nebraska's 150. We've applied for a lot of different grants and traveling exhibits that are coming in 2017. So those announcements, we're looking forward to those announcements from the government or from the governor's committee, should be coming really soon. So when you look at Mark's statistics, I think there was a good article in the Daily Sun that was released on what his attendance statistics just released were. A lot of that contributed, obviously, to Homestead Quarter, and he'd probably agree with that, and the lower gas prices, too, made a big difference in traveling time. We know that people are already traveling to Gage County to look out the hottest spot for the eclipse. They're coming ahead of time. They're traveling in now. And based upon the inquiries that we've had so far, we think we're going to top all records for Gage County for visitors coming after the eclipse. My first job was to work on Trails of Treasures, all that junk up and down Highway 136, and that's a big, big success put together by Highway 136 coordination. And so we continue to be a part of that relationship with promoting 136. So that's coming up in October. So save all your stuff, Denny. If you remember also the holiday parade event, that was the downtown holiday Sounds of the Season parade. One of the goals for the Beatrice Chamber of Commerce and also tourism is to make that something that people will travel here to Gage County and want to see. You saw pictures of the rotating lawnmowers that were made into Christmas trees, but that is obviously something, again, to attract tourism to Gage County. On marketing dollars, I can remember being here for a zoning meeting, and when Laura first came to us and asked for additional marketing dollars for And Eclipse, we all looked at her a little hesitatingly, but with an open mind. And here's some statistics that you need to know about that. The advertisements were placed in several of the national publications, including the Sky and Telescope, Pandora, the College World Series, Nebraska Life, Nebraska Traveler, many, many others. So what I have for statistics, and Mark's statistics may even broaden that base a little bit more, but we've had contacts from 22 states and 5 different countries of those individuals wanting to come to Gage County to view the eclipse. If you happen to pick up a Reader's Digest in April, you are going to see an ad in that Reader's Digest that we took advantage at the Nebraska Tourism Conference and bought at a silent auction for $600. We would have paid roughly about $3,800 for that. So you're going to see us in a circulation of 1 million plus. With that Reader's Digest. So just keep in mind, we're not trying to always advertise just the eclipse. We just want them to come here to Gage County sometime, or at least to Nebraska. So solar eclipse. As we plan for the solar eclipse, every effort that we have is going into trying to talk to the people that are calling us or either giving us an email or doing phone or media. We know right now that hotels, most of the hotels here in Gage County are full for most likely 2 days, some for 4 days. I'm taking reservations for Gage County Fair and Gage County Ag Society out at the fairgrounds, out of the tourism office for tents and RVs right now. And those vary from groups and colleges, university teams wanting to come here to analyze the eclipse. We're also working with Allied Tour and Travel, who has committed to put together tours as our inquiries have come in, and maybe make those pickups at the airports, you know, for those people that are just going to fly in, come down here to Gage County, experience Gage County, and then go back to where they came from. So we know that we have to be a very vital partner with the Homestead National Monument, because that is considered to be one of the best places to view the eclipse, but we have all kinds of communities that are making plans for the whole weekend, and we're hoping, we're reaching out to them and saying, hey, this is an opportunity to really maybe, you know, pad your budgets just a little bit and showcase your town. So as far as the advisory committee, Gary was there yesterday, just to give you a little heads up. We're trying to encourage more organizations to take advantage of those funds that are out there. Just keep in mind, when the advisory committee looks at something like that, they have to have at least 50% matchable funds. And so funds are a little tight right now. We all know in all of our pocketbooks they are, but the committee is very resourceful in trying to listen to those inquiries coming in. That account right now, as you look at your budget, I think is a little over $200,000. So there's some money to work with. It's not that, you know, the committee has turned anyone down. It's just that we're just trying to encourage, you know, participation. So if you know of something out there, just have them give us a call and we'll work them through the process. And last but not least, Nebraska State Tourism, I handed you the new campaign book. There's a program out there, several programs out there, but we welcome a new commissioner, John Ricks, who we worked with last week, and he has positive things for us to work with through my eyes. He's coming on board, but what's real is that Nebraska has lots of things to offer, and the Nebraska Passport Program, for instance, we know that we have received early commitment on being accepted with two of our businesses in Gage County for sure, and that will be soon to be announced, too. So I guess the other thing is, my goal for this next coming year is to try to promote ag tourism, agriculture being true to everybody's heart, but that's a true part of Gage County, and there's lots of incentives out there in ag tourism. People throughout the world want to know where their food comes from. They want to touch, they want to feel, they want to experience, even if it's standing in a cornfield, even if it's you know, seeing livestock being fed. That's what they want to do. Or possibly it's through, you know, promoting food to table. And so we're trying to work with some entities right now to try to do that and open some doors. So that's something to come in the future. Eclipse is taking the majority of the time right now. So questions?
I think Engage's our representative going to China was a huge thing. And I also want to note that you missed on using August 21st rather than the 23rd. The 23rd is the mayor's birthday.
Oh.
And so you just missed it by a couple
Well, we
days.
Can encourage everybody to stay two extra days
right.
for birthday cake.
Exactly
we?
Right.
Yeah, we can.
And it happens to be my birthday.
Oh,
too.
Yep.
Thank you for all you do, Lisa.
Even, yep. even better reason for you had to have scheduled this later in the week instead of Monday, Laura.
I know.
So.
Sounds like a lot of exciting things going to happen
yep.
in the next year. And
yep.
I know with the state's 150th, too, that's
yep.
Out now and really being promoted and everything. And that's, I think they're on the right track there with doing what they're doing. They're making a celebration.
They
so.
Are.
I'm going to tell them about LB 222.
Sure. LB 222, as you're looking at legislation and you hear, is revamping how the state looks at tourism. And it's now being broader based, being represented broader based throughout the state of Nebraska. So NIDA, which is a strong organization that put together this particular bill along with Laura's help, will be coming up. When's it supposed to?
We don't have a hearing date yet.
No hearing date yet. But as you hear, we are in full support of 222, which allows broader base and representation throughout Nebraska, and which would include our district and having a representative there, too. So.
Senator Baker carrying it?
No, he's
not yet.
They might not yet, but I've asked him to. Senator Stinner from Western Nebraska carried
okay.
it. Watermeyer and Coulterman just added their names to it this week. But Gage County is now included in one of those districts. There'll be 11 districts, and we're basically in the smaller southeast Nebraska districts. So if anybody wants more information, it's LB 222. If you have any questions, you can ask me. I helped with some of the language.
Get a hold of Senator Baker right away.
I've talked to Senator Baker.
Okay.
It's a good thing for us because we'll actually have somebody in our area that will be on the commission.
Yeah.
Which was one of my, I think y'all knew that was one of my things that I struggled with.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else for Lisa?
Go ahead.
This looks great.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. I haven't seen something
too.
For our area that looks remotely as good as this. So nice work.
Hey, it's a group effort. So anyway.
Very good.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, we have it. Go ahead, Gary.
I'll move to place the report on file, but first I wanted to say that Lisa's brought some energy to that position, and nothing against anybody that's been there prior to her, but you can tell she's got a passion for Gage County and a passion for what she's doing, and really appreciate what she's doing. So anyway, I moved to place the report on file.
Quarterly tourism report on file.
Yep.
Second.
A motion by Lytle, seconded by Byers. Vote 6-0 in favor. And we do have a 9:30 timed event on the clock, and on the clock I have 9:36 right now. So entertain a motion to close bids for the Colbert project.
Move to close.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Lytle to close bids at 9:36 on the clock for our Colbert project, or bidding for a Colbert project. Vote. 6-0 in favor. And we definitely have some bids, so we'll pass those down to Terry.
All right. Terry. Okay, this first bid is from TCW Construction Incorporated. I'll give you the total amount for the project, $303,762.
And this is the box culvert project north of Ellis.
North of Ellis, about four miles.
Yes.
303-762.
This is a bid from Husker Engineering Incorporated, doing business as Husker Grading. A total bid for the project, $315,848. A bid from High Plains Enterprises. Total bid for the project, $276,093.50. Each one of these carry a bid bond with them also. This is a project from Egbert Construction Incorporated, Egbert Construction Company Incorporated. Total for the project, $295,576.14. This is a proposal from Gus Construction Incorporated. Total for the project, $361,436.46. This is a bid from K2 Construction. Total cost for the project, $364,784.30. This is a bid from Voltscapes Incorporated out of Bennett, Nebraska. Total bid of $267,571.30. This is a bid from NEME Collins Contracting Company Incorporated. A total bid for the project of $369,630.17. With all of these bids, it varies per company, but for the roadway construction approaches from both sides, that's included. It isn't just a culvert. There's some road improvements on each end of these culverts. And that's included in the bid.
That's included, that's the grading included. And the road, laying the road back over, because that is a blacktop or hard surface road. Yep. So that it's also that
right.
That's also okay. included in that.
Yeah, in that total that Terry was reading off.
Yeah. That at least it should be included in there because that was part of the bid.
I mean, just looking at it, it looked like it was on everyone. It was included in the total project bid.
Well, Mike, as usual, being we have our expert here,
yeah.
I would like to have Galen and him review those. And as normal, we don't usually make a decision.
Right now, if
right
we could
now,
make a decision today, we'd like Galen and Matt to review the bids and make sure that the bids meet the specifications outlined in the bidding.
Is this something you want to act on today?
I think we want to act on this today if we can so that those companies know maybe what they can do. I guess we'll come back. I mean, okay. We can come back and have a discussion or not, or I don't know. You said maybe
do you think,
don't
want
to act on it today. Or
I'll just jump in, and if it's not a big issue for anyone, with this many bids, there was eight bids. It might be best if we take our time and review them all
okay.
and then table it.
Could you please identify yourself?
My name is Matt Manning with Minnelli Wagner & Associates.
Thank you.
Take our time, review them, and then table it until the next board meeting.
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay. That would be
good. Fine with us as long as, I mean, the companies that are here and part of this and seeing the bids so that they're aware of that, too, so that they can understand that, too, so that... if they have an issue or if they need some more clarification, please get a hold of Galen or Matt as part of that. Otherwise, but I need a motion to do that then, John.
I would move that we do that, and in addition that we finalize our right-of-way agreements with this before that 2 weeks is up with the landowners.
If possible.
Yep.
I know Galen has visited. Galen talked Friday about the right-of-way agreements, and one of them has tentatively agreed to donate their part of the easement, and the other one's Galen's visiting with. But Friday you didn't have an answer back from yet, I believe.
I have one signed up this time.
You have one of the two signed up, but Galen's visiting with them about getting the easements, the right-of-way easements there for that on either side of there. Because of the depth of the project and stuff, it's going to take a little bit more easement than sometimes is more easement than what we have as a county right away there or whatever. So that's part of it. John, then you made a motion to accept the bids
yes.
and table the decision for 2 weeks.
Second.
With the right away being completed.
With the right away.
Attempt to complete.
Attempted right away acquisition completed, yeah. Because we hope we can. We're not going to guarantee that, but that would be a small part of whatever going forward that right away. So,
Byron, just to come verify that, I hope people in this situation understand this will improve their properties.
Yes, sir.
It's an improvement. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. We have a motion by Hill and a second by Juergens to. Accept all bids and table the decision for 2 weeks for the decision. I will make this comment. I don't know who's here from the bidders or whatever. Appreciate very much. This is quite a turnout. We really, really, really appreciate everybody taking the opportunity to come forward and bid on this project. That is tremendous, I think. I counted 8 bidders here, which is... unbelievable. Wow. It's a lot better than 1 or 2 or 3. We just want everybody to know that. We really, really appreciate you taking the time and bidding on this project. Thank you very much. So, vote. 6-0 in favor.
Matt has
go ahead, Matt.
I got one, I guess, good news for a change. The Nebraska Concrete Paving Association is having their annual meeting right now, and they felt that the Beatrice Northwest Phase 1 and Phase 2 project, which is more commonly known as Hickory Road, was their choice for the county pavement project for 2016. So you've got yourself a nice plaque, and each of you got a certificate that I'll leave over here.
Wow.
Wow.
Nobody ever gives us a plaque.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. I know, yeah, I don't know if any of you guys, was somebody able to go to that meeting or?
Yeah, Mark and Jeff were there yesterday.
They were there. Well, good. Good deal and stuff. So thank you for attending. And Gary?
Matt, I don't think you have enough certificates there because there's 40 years of boards that worked on that.
Yeah. You guys will have to decide. You can probably cross out some names. Make copies.
White out some names, make some copies, and give it to a lot of others.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of highway superintendents. And
I think I'm probably the only one that started on the first board 40 years ago.
I drove it a couple weeks ago. It turned out good, I think.
Yeah.
We can just get the railroad tracks in order.
Well, and the railroad tracks, I did send another email back to the contact lady, the Kate Kalinske or whatever, and haven't heard back from her again. So it's not that we're just leaving that die out there, but no, the railroad is. I found out one thing, when they have a derailment, they can really get a lot of equipment up there, because they had one up by Adams, and boy, they're just amazing what they can do. But then when you're not in that situation, then you wait till they schedule it. So we will continue to pursue that. So hopefully we'll get that done this year.
Yep. Well, we'll get these looked over for everybody and come back to the county. So thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Back to the regular agenda then. Jeremy Behrens, Chief Probation Officer, to present the update on reporting center.
Good morning. I'm Jeremy Behrens, Chief Probation Officer, District 1. This is Eric Perkins. He's our Reporting Center Coordinator. I'm going to have him speak here a little bit as well, if that's okay. First, I want to thank you all for your time today. I know you all are very busy, and I appreciate this chance to speak in front of you all. The last time I was here was prior to our open house that we had in November. It was extremely successful. Mr. Byers, I got a chance to speak with you. Thank you for attending. We had a lot of a really good turnout. The Chief Justice of the Nebraska Supreme Court, Mike Hevigan, was there. The State Court Administrator, Corey Steele, was there. Several judges who cover District 1 were there. Mr. Harris was there. Sheriff Gustafson and Beatrice Chief Lang and Mayor Worth, among several other people, were there. So it was a really good turnout. Now that the open house is over, now we're just, you know, really focusing on what we can do to continue to build it and improve services for our clients and to members of the community. If you recall last time, I mentioned that I am extremely thankful for the support that Gage County has given probation prior to my arrival and since I've been here. I do think it's important for me to come and talk with you all and present to you. I don't want to just show up when I'm asking for things or presenting a budget or, you know, things like that. So that's kind of one of the purposes of me being here today, is to talk about the reporting center, and then we'll get to what you just got in the handout. I mentioned that I brought reporting center coordinator Eric Perkins along with me today. Our support staff, Kate Mites, is here as well. Handed you out those pamphlets. I do want to point out that the services that we're going to talk about here, these are all provided through contracts that are paid for by the state. They're at no cost to our clients, so that's been a big hurdle in the past when our clients have to pay for these services, because, you know, a lot of them don't have the funding to do that. So to be able to provide that to our clients free of cost is extremely important, and this is also available to members of the community as well. It's not just to people on probation. So I just wanted to give a brief explanation of probation and I guess how we determine areas that we'll addressing with each of our individual clients. All the reporting center programs that you see mentioned in there, they're all based on evidence. They're not just us saying we're going to have you do this for no reason. I mean, there's evidence and research based on a program that we're having a client get into that will show that there's behavior change and hopefully lead to safer communities, people out of jail, and whatnot. At our first meeting with the clients, we'll do an assessment with them, and that allows us to really target what we need to focus on. An example of this is, you know, we might have somebody that's in front of us for a domestic violence case. It would be easy just to look at their charge and think that they need to be involved in domestic violence classes or something like that, and that's it. There may be some underlying issues with alcohol or drugs or, you know, other issues, whereas this assessment really helps us determine those needs and what areas that we need to focus on. So I mentioned it in there. It's the LSCMI. That's the assessment that we use. Basically, that assessment, it's important because it really gets us a chance to target, you know, what we need to focus on first. We don't, a lot of times we don't have these people for a lot of time, so it's important to focus on what we can immediately and try to get behavior change with that that'll provide safer communities and people out of jail. So you'll see on there, we kind of wanted to highlight two programs. I'm going to have Eric Perkins talk about those two programs here.
Morning.
Morning.
The first one you'll see there that we highlight is moral recognition therapy. This is a very engaging, intensive therapy that is led by our probation officers. Each client is required to complete each step week by week. It's really a very engaging therapy for them to recognize maybe the actions that they've created and things they've done in their life and to change their way of thinking. So it's something, again, that we have really emphasized. We've increased our numbers and attendance through this week by week, and so we continue to see a growth in participants each time we hold these sessions. The next one there is employment services. I think most of us know that this is a huge barrier for many of our clients, not only just trying to find employment, but also to keep that employment and stay employed. And so we have contracted through ResCare Workforce Services, and they do a great job of bringing our clients in and sitting them down and talking to them about how do you build a resume, how do you go through an interview process, how do you hold a job. And then also, and then it builds from that as well. If you turn to the second page there, there's a few numbers associated with this. Again, it's a very new program that we've started just in the last couple months. So you'll see that we have 15 individuals that have attended so far. And out of those individuals, we're at a 54% job placement rate right now. As I speak, that's going on right now in our offices. And we have a full house. There are, I believe, we're expecting at least six people in attendance today to start. So it's a really nice thing that we have going on with that. So we really encourage all of our clients, if they're struggling to find a job and to maintain a job, to really attend this. And we're getting really good feedback from our clients is what they're learning through this program so far. So again, just two programs that we're really emphasizing right now through our many programs that we offer. So, Jeremy.
Just kind of finishing up, I mentioned in there future programming that we're going to add to the reporting center. I just want to highlight a couple facts here. All of these services are provided at the reporting center, which is within our probation office, and that's extremely important because if we have a client that's going to an outside agency and doing that, number one, our officers or our staff are not seeing those clients. If they're coming into our office, and, you know, that provider can see, hey, Jim's acting weird, there's something going on, they can communicate right with our staff that immediately, and we can provide follow-up right away. Whereas if they're going outside of our office, you know, that's a lot more difficult, and that communication is probably lost. So that's a real big benefit to that reporting center, is because they are coming into our office. Just highlighted five different programs there that we're going to be adding here in the future. You know, they kind of speak to themselves, you know, the anger management. You know, several of our clients have issues with that, and that's a great service to be able to have, again, within our office instead of having them go out to an outside agency to get that. Dialectical behavior therapy. Eric mentioned the MRT program. This DBT program is really for our highest risk need clients. That's actually led by a licensed clinical psychologist, whereas the MRT program, our officers are trained in that, and they're doing the groups themselves. This DBT program is a pretty high-level program, and it's run by a clinical psychologist, again, within our office. The pretreatment,
one of the real beneficial things to that is when people are entering substance abuse treatment, that they have the right mindset when they're going in there, and they're not just starting, you know, from day one and they're getting thrown all this stuff and it's just overwhelming. That pre-treatment really allows them to get in the right mindset before they start that. Parenting group, you know, a lot of our clients have parenting issues. They, you know, that goes back to how they were raised. You know, they may have not had the best upbringing, and being able to have that parenting class or program for them to be involved in is really important, so we can try to stop it at that point and their kids have a good upbringing. Money management, again, that's a great program because it allows, you know, if a lot of people have restitution or a lot of fines that they may have to pay, that program works with them through that process to be able to budget money. A lot of the clients that we deal with have never had any training as far as how to balance a checkbook, you know, do those little things that, you know, I'd say that I was blessed with good parents that taught me how to do that. So just being able to do, you know, those little things like that really go a long way, not only while they're on probation, but when they get off and, you know, they're productive members of the community. That final page, that really speaks to itself. It's just the numbers that we have at the reporting center here, going from September to December. You know, again, like Eric mentioned, our numbers are growing, so that's important to point out, I think, and it's only going to continue to grow as we add more services to the community. So I thank you guys for your time, and if you have any questions or need any follow-up discussions, don't hesitate to get a hold of me. And
some of these services you're adding, then, is that more directed from the state, or that's office philosophy?
Throughout the probation districts in the state, there are other reporting centers, and it's nice. We were one of the final ones to get a reporting center, so it's nice in that sense. We kind of have a template to follow. So the programs we have now are the ones that we really see the high numbers in that we wanted to get going right away, and then these other ones, you know, it's still going to be a big benefit, but, you know, just slowly adding things as they progress. So, that's kind of how we follow that.
I want to thank you for all you do. So many of the individuals you work with, you get out of this norm and move them into another level. And I know working with being chairman of the Region 5 Systems Board, I see so much of this. And thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you.
Eric?
As your numbers go up here, I mean, you're not only doubling your quadrupling people here. Are you adding staff then along the way? I mean, is there projections for how many people we anticipate adding?
Well, when previous year LB 605 was passed, and long to make that a summary, we gained 5 staff out of that, so that helped cover in anticipation of you know, the potential numbers that we would see increase in, you know, coming through our offices. So LB 605, as far as how it affected probation, a number of ways, but the big effect is it people that were convicted of a lower level felony that went to prison, instead of them either coming out on parole or just doing their time and not coming out with any supervision, required that they come out on post-release supervision, which is basically probation. So that's the numbers that kind of speak to that a little bit, that's increasing. And they had some foresight into that and provided staff across the state, you know, anticipating that. So,
Jeremy, one of the things that will affect this board is that property that we leased down there.
Mm-hmm.
And you say that, you know, we've added 5. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be further additions to the staff down there? I know we've done some work down there and kind of made it more appealing to you guys. You know, is that going to be sufficient forward?
Yes, I think so. And I don't have any worry going forward, at least in the near future, that we're going to be adding any. I mean, with the state budget, I don't know that we're going to be adding any staff. So, you know, I mean, I'm so thankful for that space because it is really nice. And when we had our open house, everybody coming in complimented us on how nice it looked. And that goes back to you guys for your support. I mean, it is really nice. So, but I don't foresee us running out of room, you know, at any point in time in the near future. So,
yeah.
Anything else?
That's all I got.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Entertain a motion to place the report on file.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Beyer, second by Lytle. Vote 6-0. Pass 6-0. Next up, Carla Jones. Present the Blue River Basin Community Alert System. You were here Friday to visit about this?
So yep, I was here Friday to visit about this. Roger, did you get one of these?
No, I didn't.
Get lunch today.
Thank you. I know Terry wasn't here. I don't know if you remember who else was. Oh, Eric didn't show up till real late, so.
Yeah. Didn't want to change everything.
Gotcha.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
Well, the Communications Center had an emergency notification system in place prior to this, although we have switched software to a company called AlertSense, which has been recognized by the state of Nebraska as being the one to go through. The state of Nebraska is supporting the IPAWS part of the notification system. This, we've partnered with Jefferson and Saline County to form the Blue Rivers Basin Community Alert System. Within that, there's some cost sharing involved so that we can share the price in this software. The community alert system, you can go online and register your cell phone, your email. You can select which kind of alerts that you'd like to receive, whether it be public safety alerts for active shooter or hazardous materials. We can send out notifications for road closures, power outages, severe weather. I don't know, Gary, did you get a lot of notifications on your alert sense that you
there was a few that came through, but it wasn't
right.
It wasn't to the point that you're going to turn it off and not pay attention.
Right. And you have the ability to go on to your account at any time and pick and choose what you want to be alerted for. Partnering with Jefferson and Saline County also gives us the ability to back each other up. So let's say they have a significant event where they don't have the staffing or the ability to go online and send out an alert for their public. We would be able to do that and vice versa. So they named it the Blue River Basin just because we foresee more counties coming on board with that and sharing the cost in that. So it's an easy app to put on your phone. It's easy to go online and register. We're doing a big community push with the paper. I know we spoke about that the other day.
There's been an article already, I think. One article. So,
okay, yeah. And then I think that I'm going to be with the mayor tomorrow on the radio. I'm not quite sure, but well, that.
No, they've had a headline at least on their web for their things about it and stuff too. So it's been out there. Yeah.
Right. And it's real easy. And if anybody has any difficulty, they can contact the dispatch or the communication center or myself, and we can walk you through it. We can do it for you. Anyone who had previously registered with the other app that we had or software that we had is merged over, so they don't need to do anything. So that's all I got.
Thank you.
Any questions?
More questions.
Okay, thank you.
Terry wasn't here. We thought maybe he'd be interested, but he's a little bit like me. He's not. He can't sit here like Gary can.
Get it on your phone.
Gary dialed it up and got on there and got registered right here at the meeting the other day. So
yeah,
Terry and I know we'll have to have our grandkids show us. So thank you. Next on the agenda, Gus with the third quarter report for the Sheriff's Department, jail, and the courthouse.
Good morning. We'll have Brian go ahead and give his report first. So we can get back to court.
Well, he's paced up and down the hallway out there about 10 times already. So
we're out the time.
Yeah.
I stayed on the black one. We'll be looking at a sheet that looks like this.
About the last one.
How you doing today?
Make sure the press gets the name.
We'll be on a sheet that looks like this, guys.
Mark,
I believe
you can interrupt you about a few folks we have.
So are these the glasses?
Those are glasses for the eclipse.
We're going to sell those.
Making sure you use it, because every year you look at my budget. If you don't use it, you can't see what you're looking at.
This will help with the budget, you're saying?
Help look at my budget.
Oh. Can you give me one with no lenses?
Yeah.
That's dark.
Okay, for the third quarter of 2016, we were staffed 63 days in that quarter. We had 4,138 patrons come through there. That's non-attorney. That's just people that are showing up for business or court. That's 66 patrons a day. And we had 583 cell phones. 83 cutting or stabbing tools were found. Made 11 warrant arrests. We had helped corrections. Sometimes they're a little short staffed with bringing 15 inmates over to court. We served six civil process papers. Six people were remanded by judge into our custody. Issued one misdemeanor citation. Attended two safety committee meetings. I helped Dave with doing testing of the duress alarms. And then we did a courthouse-wide training, and on that one, we didn't tell the staff what we were doing. We just locked it, and then we had the fire alarm go off. We borrowed a smoke maker from the Beatrice Fire Department, and we put smoke up the second or the middle staircase, and that's to teach them that if the smoke's coming up one staircase, to use the other staircase. And then we had... we did a tornado warning. During that tornado warning, the smoke hit the smoke detectors on the fourth floor, so we had a smoke and fire alarm. So, or we had a fire alarm and a tornado warning. So, and then we also did an active shooter. And then when they were starting to leave, someone found a suspicious bag at one of the doors. So then they had to react to that. So I thought it was kind of fun, but it was different. And that was pretty much it for the third quarter.
What was the misdemeanor citation?
Probably driving under suspension. So people are learning that's gone down quite a bit, but not to drive to court.
To leave court, you get back in the car and leave.
With a suspended license.
And then come over and see us or get a citation, whichever.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much for the opportunity to serve you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Art.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, go right in the third quarter for the Sheriff's Office. Starting out with calls for service, we had 1,866. We had 62 accidents, 36 citations, 368 warnings, 240 arrests, 294 papers were served, 112 arrest warrants were served. We collected in fees $2,952.15. Mileage fees earned was $3,942.69. We made $5 off of copies. We had no distress warrants collected in full and none collected in partial payment. We had $3,820 collected in title inspection fees. We had 65,222 miles driven in patrol units. 1,569 of those miles were prisoner transports. The money reimbursed from grants was $972.93. We had no meth labs. We had 10 drug violations. Excuse me. We had no reserve miles. We had 8 reserve hours. We had 90 building checks, and of those 90, 3 were found open. Today I'll fill in for Lieutenant Shepherdson. He's busy on transports today. We'll start with bookings. We had 163 total. 73 were male. 184 were females. Felonies were 240. Misdemeanors were 84. Miscellaneous was 132. 107. Let me get my line back here where I'm at. I better do this. He's getting too long for him anymore.
You're a line off there.
I know.
Oh.
Thank you, wife. That's my wife tells me the same thing. Well, let's get back down to others. Okay. Others was misdemeanors was 84. Others was 132. Sheriff's Office arrests were 107. Beatrice Police were 2. Weimar Police were 11.
Nebraska State Patrol was none. Other agencies were 20. No, wait, back up. You're still off of one. Here we go. State Patrol were 11.
No, start over.
Start over?
This is on record, so start.
Oh, yeah, which one are you at? Which get off
start
that
at
here?
The top again and go down.
All right. Bookings?
Well.
Or you want to go to arrest?
Start with bookings.
Sheriff's Office?
And mail, start with 163.
163.
Here.
We're clear at the top. You want to start at the top? Okay.
Start at the top.
Bookings, 163.
For mail.
Okay, that's what I start on total beginning. Okay, 163 male. I was lying off totally.
Yeah.
71 for females, 184 felonies.
Now, you were off on that. You show here 73.
No.
No, 73 were
for females.
For female. Next one down, 184 for felonies.
Yeah, I thought you said 71. Okay.
Might have been initially there. Misdemeanors was 240. Others were 84. And the sheriff's office had 132. And let's see. Beatrice Police had 107.
Yep.
Wymore had 2. State Patrol had 11. Other agencies were 21.
Zero.
There we are. State Patrol. Yeah, there we go. I'm going to get a hard ruler for this thing.
Yep. Yes.
Okay, alcohol-related arrests were 21. Average daily population was 26. Average outside hold high was 17, low was 5. Income from outside holding prisoners was 165. Income from fingerprints taken was 917.50. Income for inmate phone usage was nothing. Commissary income was $5,937.85. Outside prisoner holding was $44,178. Our general care for emergency medic was $14,092.11. Vision was none. Dental was $1,208. Our total for medical was $15,300.11. Any question on any of those? After I had you totally confused. And me.
Sheriff, I see the State Patrol has quadrupled their arrests. Just wondering why that is.
A lot more troopers in the area now.
Why is that?
Well, for years, we had 5 to 6 years ago. Through their process, whatever it is, whether budgetary or reassignments, we were down to all about 2 is all we ever had. Now they have deemed it necessary to have more back in again like we had back in the 70s, 80s, because we do have quite a bit going on. So they've made an attempt to have about 5 or 6 more back in the area again, actual road troopers. In the past, they were related to alcohol enforcement, DOT enforcement, investigators, so those people weren't on the road. Now a lot of those people have moved on, and now it's all road troopers. So that's a lot of the reason why you're seeing that number spike, I'm sure.
Does that mean we need less sheriff's department on the road? And less?
No, because they're on highway patrol.
They're on gravel road patrol.
Occasionally they are.
Patrol.
If they are out there, they're there because I made that request. Westcott, in the West Hickory, we get complaints on that for speeding. We have other obligations besides just traffic tickets, so my guys can't be there constantly. I know it's always a sore spot for you on this stuff, Eric, but unfortunately it's a necessary evil.
I've heard complaints, but not about speeding. I've just heard complaints about the State Patrol being out on Hickory Road, and I guess I would want to focus on crime again, not victimless crime, but crimes where there are kids involved, things like that, where we're focusing on drugs, not on speeding tickets. I don't see that as a good use of funding.
Well, I tell you, next time that there's a fatality accident, how about you come out with me and then you give that death message and see how you think about it.
The fatality accident from speeding?
Or from drunk driving. We've had them both.
Or from drunk driving.
Any traffic infraction can lead to fatality accident.
Any accident. They're really good about it.
Legislature passes laws. I just have to enforce them. Some we don't like. You know, it's some people don't like the speed limit either. I can tell you nobody goes 65 out here on the 4-lane. I could have my guys out there 24/7 write tickets all day long. They pass marked patrol units even. That's how
ignorant they are on things.
Except for this morning. When you came into town this morning, you didn't drive 70.
Probably not.
65.
No.
Everybody was driving 50 and 55. Yep. I could not believe it, but you could not drive any faster.
Too, on the ice.
Road conditions.
Yeah, it's... People keep pushing the button. That's the problem, a lot of it. They just want to just little more. That's just what it boils down to.
A lot of money going to...
Gary, you got a question?
...over for speeding and stuff, though. Not necessarily from the sheriff's
department. No. But it makes a difference.
When the state's short of money, I see it as really poor use of funding.
Well, I just wear the badge in the county. You can call up there and talk to your senator. You can talk to Colonel, State Patrol.
Well, I disagree with you, Mr. Team, and I think it's a safety thing, and I think it needs to be done.
Gary?
Yeah, bear with me. Several things. Meth labs, it appears as though the meth issue is over because we haven't had a meth lab here in
3 years.
3 years.
Well, I wouldn't say it's over. We're probably not as much of them as we're seeing in the county, just visible like they used to be. We'll find some items that they'll throw out that they're disposed of. We're doing a lot. We'll find some once in a while in a residence or something on different things we're doing. But right, it's peaks and valleys, you know. Right now, we just got a pretty large, sizable arrest a couple days ago on marijuana. Marijuana's going to be pretty popular again.
Mm-hmm.
It was very sizable, like I think 2 or 3 pounds, and it was very high-quality package ready to go for distribution. So it just depends. And I say this now, and then come summertime, we're going to have 2 or 3 labs. It just depends.
I wonder if part of this is the lack in spending or funds that are being spent going towards that, or is it?
Well, it always. I can tell you when we talked a couple times before, you know, on having a person dedicated to investigation on drugs, it's made a huge difference. This arrest we made this week was strictly because of that person's work for several months putting into it. A road deputy's not going to have a lot of that time to do that. So, yeah, it makes a big difference. You put money into it, you'll reap some rewards along the line, definitely. But it just depends.
One of the things that we do as a benefit to people in the county is we check buildings and doors and stuff like that. You know, if you look back from 2014, we had as many as 800 in a quarter, and this last quarter we're at 90. Is that a recording change, or is it just the fact that there isn't as much of that going on? Or?
Probably just it again. It varies. Depends on how busy they are. You know, they try to get out. I don't want to go too much into it on public record, but they try to get out and do what they can. We don't stay a set pattern. We mix it up, obviously, so the criminal element doesn't know routinely doing it. Again, say calls for service, depends who it is. You have younger guys who are probably a lot more enthusiastic getting out, doing that on a cold day versus someone other that's more seasoned. But we try to hit them as much as we can, but it is very time-consuming. Again, depends on budgetary reasons. You know, if things really get tight, I know in the old days we would do a lot of stationary radar or walk a lot of the streets and check doors because we really cut back on the gas budget. So, again, it just depends. There's a lot of different things that play into that number.
Thanks. The last one I got, kind of one of my irritants that you know, I understand the war against alcohol and all this stuff that we seem to carry on all the time. But, you know, just like in our detention center report, you got 5% of the arrests that are made coming in, and we got a category for alcohol related arrests. You know, and that's 5% of what are brought into us. I guess I would rather see that more of a focus on working on drugs and highlighting that as opposed to alcohol all the time. I trust me, I get it. You know, I don't want anybody out drinking and driving either. I just get a little irritated with the focus that we always put on that when there's other things out there that are a lot more harmful than what we see with it. I mean, again, I understand the alcohol side of it and how harmful that can be to a family and to a person, but I know, you know, them drugs and stuff, you know, they stay in the body a lot longer than what alcohol does, and you know, I'm not an expert on drugs and alcohol and anything. I just, like I said, it's just a personal irritant that we always focus so much on the alcohol side of things?
Well, I think alcohol has been around so much longer and so more open that we have a lot of grants. You can apply for that stuff. I can apply for granting the day of the year and get for it. Drugs, they're coming around. I have a lot of people call me, why can't you have more drug arrests? Drugs are very, very time-consuming, very expensive to work those cases. It's just not like going out and finding a drunk driver. Now, we're finding more and more DUD, driving under drugs. There's a few of those out there. We'll catch once in a while. But it's more open, the alcohol side. So obviously when you're out enforcing laws, you're going to see more of those. But we can certainly have a category in here on the drug arrests, I mean, because there's plenty of them that come in on that. Probably more, I'm guessing.
Well, just to even compound on that, you know, I've worked with kids since I was a kid myself. You know, the year after I was done with high school and moved on to college, I was coaching baseball with the Legion program out here. So I've always been around kids. And one of the things you always hear from some of these kids that are 15, 16, 17 years old is that, you know, why would anybody go out and drink alcohol when we can smoke pot and we get a slap on the wrist as opposed to what we get for doing alcohol?
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that, but unfortunately that's above my pay grade. That has to go to even above Roger. That goes to the county attorney, or it goes to the courts. You know, I wouldn't necessarily disagree with it, but it's a system. You know, I make the arrest, he prosecutes, and they sentence. That's how it goes. So,
Sheriff, I know I'm always encouraging you to spend less, but now moving forward, you have made steps with the drug arrest, you know, by getting a canine. Do you see anything that you're going to need moving forward this year, or any anticipated
expenses, you mean? Well, I think actually he's up today doing all his testing to call out and to certify out. I think we had about 45 or 46,000, if I remember correctly, in that number. I think we'll be pretty close to getting everything covered that he needs. I know there's a couple more donations coming in for equipment. So I don't see a lot right now. We had a couple unexpected vet bills. We just can't foresee those things. But I think we've got a majority of it covered for the expense on transition, on the buying a dog, equipping the vehicle, getting him trained. I think we're doing pretty good on that.
And my disdain for so much State Patrol presence here is in support of you again, saying every time we need something, I mean, our Sheriff's Department does a good job. I mean, we aren't shorthanded here. Well, our Sheriff's Department may be shorthanded, but in our county, I mean, you guys provide a great service to everyone. And I don't see us needing that much outside help. I'm excited to see we are putting some focus on the drugs, especially with the kids. The kids already know there's another drug dog around. I mean, kids will talk about that stuff faster than anyone else.
And he'll be getting out there as soon as he's here and get settled. We'll be going to the schools and stuff, introducing him and the Buster to everybody so they know and see him and stuff. So hopefully it'll make a difference. Like I said, we put the investigator in there to help on it. Having the drug dog now, I think it's hopefully we'll keep Roger busier. Just kind of depends. But I hope it's a good addition to the county because we really needed that back again. So,
well, I think we'll talk about the grant a little later, about the grant with you and the police department.
One comment I'll make is money spent on outside prisoners' holdings. If you look at the last three quarters there, we've averaged $40,000. If you look at the previous year there, we haven't been near that. In 2014, we got close to that. You know, that's going to be a strain on the budget.
I think
we all know that, but we also all know, I call it the business we're having. Unfortunately, that puts a constraint not only in our county and other counties. You're reading articles about other counties, too, that had to do this or that to cope with it. So
the only good about that number, if there's anything good on it, is we have one of the best contracts in the state, I've been told.
Yes.
So that's a blessing, because that number would be a lot more than
that. That number would be higher. So
yes,
we're fortunate in that respect. But when you look at the prisoners holdings, the high and the low and the number that are out there and the dollar amounts, I know we didn't, if you took four quarters at $40,000, it's $160,000. You didn't budget for $160,000. So, and that's our outside prisoner holding. That doesn't take into account all of the costs that we incur at the jail here for having jail. So, I mean, that is something that as we go forward, we're very much aware of, but we also have to realize that that puts a strain on county budgets also. So, and the state's talking a lot about it too now. And
Might have an impact on my budget.
Well, that's part of the comment. You just sit here and you go, with their budget issues, them dealing with the system, what they're dealing with, are they going to... The fear in your mind is, what are they going to pass down instead of them taking that expense? So that's
very much so.
Any more questions or comments for the report? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to put on file the quarterly report for Gage County Sheriff's Office.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Byer, second by Thiemann. Vote. 6-0 in favor, and we are going to take a 5-minute break. We haven't had a meeting this long in quite a while. So.
I was waiting who's going to get it.
Okay.
I love it.
Are we ready to start again?
Let's see. No?
Yeah, we're yeah here everybody's yet, here, but Eric, but we'll start without him
there, okay,
for a minute.
Like them in here.
Is Don ready? Are we on?
You're on.
We're back on and 10:33 on the clock. Next item on the agenda is discussion on the architectural drawing for the sheriff's office. And I believe this time we have a meeting, so Mr. Fackler can be here and be part of the discussion and see what kind of questions we have and stuff. And Dave's here also. So,
what do you want to start with? Do you want to have Mike kind of just walk you through the second thing? Walk you through the second.
You all have this yet?
Is everybody fine?
You still have yours?
Everybody fine there?
He's got his.
I was a little about electricity the other night. I had to keep warm. I burned it. No.
Oh, gosh.
I'll look.
Well, it was on the law enforcement committee agenda. And it's a packet, and it's Friday. Second page from the back, and and they call it the concept number 2 floor plan, I believe.
Okay, you want to hear just about number 2, or do you want to hear about both of them?
I just want to hear about number 2, but I don't know about
everybody
else.
I think that interested us quite a bit. Okay. After we had a discussion of a meeting a couple meetings ago, and I think we had a good conversation Friday about it, but we also had some questions, and that's why we're glad you're here today so that we can direct them, hopefully get some answers or whatever. But that did show more interest to us than the first one did. So I think let's concentrate on that first, and then if we need to, then we can go to the other one. But
The concept number 2 is basically to take the old ambulance garage and move offices into there, and so we can place those offices on an accessible level from a handicap standpoint. One of the things that it allows us to do is to, at some point, demolish the old jail building, because it's moving people out of there. From a city standpoint, they were asking us not to utilize the head-in parking where we have the inspection location right now. And so what we've done is we've taken that inspection drive and the drive to the Sallyport, used that as a one-way in and out to allow us to bring a handicap accessible spot as close as we possibly can to the building, and then gives us a couple of additional parking places as well, and one of those which we can use for the inspection area. We end up with 4 offices, lobby, ADA accessible restroom, and a spot for attorney-client access. The one thing about this concept is, since we are losing the ambulance bay, we will have to have an additional building for the storage.
Whatever's in there,
yes,
will not be thrown away. Yeah,
right. So it
will need to be accounted for.
It does come with that additional cost, and that building would have to come up first before we could start making these modifications.
So what you're saying is if this was a plan that ended up being something that we found doable, we would need to be putting up maybe a storage building or something. Somehow we need to handle that issue before you're going to start on this.
Right, right.
Do we have any kind of ballpark figures as far as cost is concerned?
Not at this time. It will depend upon how large that storage building needs to be. I don't know if we're going to just accommodate what's there now or if we're looking to the future on that for what additional needs the sheriff might have.
Well, I think what Denny's asking about, Mike, is just this project here. Another building wouldn't be part of this project. It would be aside from that. So I think what Denny's asking is just this here renovation.
Okay. Well, I mean, if we're looking at just the renovation of that existing space, we're probably looking at probably in the neighborhood of $100 a square foot.
Okay, and how many square foot do we have?
I don't have that information at this time, but I can get that information for you.
That would help because $100 doesn't make any difference if you don't know how many square foot it is.
Is that taking into account the drive or anything? Or the changes to parking in the drive?
It should be sit right at 1,600.
Okay.
47 feet by 34 feet.
$160,000 then without anything else. With no extras.
All right. That additional building as well. I mean, of the two concepts, the first one is the least expensive because it's more expensive per square foot, but it doesn't have the need for the additional building. So, but the second concept takes in more of the sheriff's long-range plans and needs.
Sheriff, does this seem to meet what you would need, or how does this look to you? And then as far as an additional building, how much space do you anticipate needing?
Well, if we go with the second concept, obviously, the second building is going to be a must, and it's going to have to be fairly sizable because we have the east garage, or used to be the sheriff's private one, is full of evidence as well. So we'd try to have to get that all in one area. We were just throwing around, what did we say, 40 by 60, 40 by 80? Did we talk about that last time? Or?
Yes, I don't remember.
You know, it depends. It wouldn't have to be all concrete, obviously. We can have a portion of concrete for the evidence and office area for the evidence side of it. So, you know, I suppose 30, 40 foot wide and right by 60 is going to fill real quick because you got two or three vehicles, speed trailer, an evidence area that needs to be much, much bigger than it is now. And we have a large item like pivot tires, coke machines, things like that over here take a lot of bulk room up. So it'd fill pretty fast. So I wouldn't want to do anything a lot smaller than that, probably. Obviously, that's just thinking off the cuff. So,
how much of the garage space are we using now for storage, Gus?
This one over here, or that one.
This one.
That one. Well, technically, it's kind of all storage. Really, what now? We have one corner they put up for us that's for evidence. What is that, probably 14 by 20, Spencer? The evidence area, roughly.
Yeah, pretty close, probably.
Right in that area. Then the rest will be, we have ammunition, dry storage for the things the guys use. Got a couple toolboxes out there, so it goes pretty quick. And, of course, you got, like I say, a speed trailer, Kawasaki mule, a couple of vehicles. And you have one bay that's always available. We bring something to process it, like a vehicle or an item. We have to have controlled climate. Or if bad weather, we'll try to get one patrol unit in, keep it thawed out so we can go right away on emergency. And then if you would throw in what we have over here, it'd fill a building pretty quick.
I would say if we are going to build another building, at that time, if we do decide that, make it bigger than what we think we need right now.
I'd agree.
plan for the future a little bit there, because
it will
seem too small from the day you open the door.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, unfortunately, you're going to be stuck in that area for quite a while. And
realistically,
just opening up that house being able to be removed.
Well, and it comes down to what the long-range goals are going to be. If we do anything now, we want to make sure something's going to tie into something down the road for a few years. So this isn't all for naught. You know, so you can come back and still use it. So with this one here, now we've tried to get it to where everything is out of the sheriff's living quarters, the old one, except for just storage that's downstairs. Yep. Everything else should be over on this side of the 70s building versus the 1900s building on this side.
Yep. So. And I believe that was a lot of our discussion after the first drawing was to maybe do as little as possible in that house, that old house, because I think long range, if we're looking at anything long range at all, that's not part of the picture.
Right.
That's eliminated. And drawing number one, yes, it'd be cheaper, but that used that house quite a bit yet.
Yeah, the main level would still be in service. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that has been a concern for years, that house and the different levels and the condition of it and the jail, everything has a lot of other issues, but that has probably some of our main issues. So as we talked that very first meeting, that is when some of these thoughts came about, that maybe possibly we need to look at, can we get to a point, build another building, build these offices, and then remove the house, full well knowing that at some time in the future there may need to be something going back in there. But there again, there'll probably be steps for us, because we know people have voted that they're not going to spend $5-8 million, and I don't think with our financial condition that's going to happen either anytime soon. So then you start looking at other things, and that's where we've all, Gus and everybody, started looking at and started having the discussion. Any more questions or thoughts? Or I'll just throw this out. If we could get, you know, maybe by next meeting, a little better idea of a cost on this. You know, Dave gave you some numbers there, but you look at what you think it's going to be, a cost estimate. And then the other thing is, I'll just throw this on your shoulders, Gus. You guys plan a little bit what size of building you're going to need, and then maybe a cost on that too. I think as we go forward, we're going to need a cost on that building and then and this, to see maybe a general idea of where we're looking at going forward here. So I think there's enough interest on the board that we just don't want to drop this. We want to keep going on this. And we also realize that this isn't going to happen this summer. This is going to take time, and we'll have to develop steps and work it as we go along. So, Eric?
Sheriff, maybe also see if there's any grants. You talked about evidence storage equipment, things like that. I don't know if there's any programs to help with funding
No, the best we can do is, I know the technicians that I have belong to the association. They might have some floor plans for us that they kind of recommend from other places, have tried it and tested it and use it that way. Grant money, the other thing I know out there was when we were looking at the jail a long time ago, was USDA had some very low interest loan, long-term loans, but I don't know of any grants right off that we can snoop around on it anyway.
Any idea of a location where you want to put that? I mean, that's been a hot topic as far as evidence storage. Does that go back behind where that old house was? Does that go at a remote location?
Well, we would like to keep it here, because that's the problem we're having now. It's even inconvenient to have it just for the cars or big items down Weimar. You got to make a 30-mile round trip. But here, preferably on this half block,
And somebody Friday brought up even closing the alley. What's the possibility of closing the alley? I think somebody at some time needs to visit with the city about, is that a possibility? That would help us a lot if you're going to build it in the back, anywhere back there, closing the alley. I don't know. That we'd have to get a hold of the city and start looking into that. So
if you bounce ideas around, that concrete lot, of course, is one spot that would work for a building. What's the repercussion of moving all those cars somewhere else?
Boy.
Well, if you brought all we got down there up here, it'd take a real big... Well, what's the building we got down there now again? What size is that? Remember what that is?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
We can fill that pretty quick with 2-3 vehicles, and it's... And then some miscellaneous stuff we have, we're still trying to identify the stolen, so...
you know, Matt always thought if we ever did something down the road, you'd start over here where the parking lot is and start working your way this way, remodel or tear as you needed to go. So if we did something on a building, maybe a standalone building, you'd have to be conscious of that. So you didn't have any plans on something like that, you could tie it into it. So if we didn't close the alley, then you'd have the choice of putting it in that lot and messing up any things you're going to do for remodeling or adding on, or you put it standalone across, also in the parking lot across the way.
The rock parking lot.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so it's nothing's ideal. It's just you'd have to figure out a long-term master plan.
Anything here should be at least safe, I would think.
Well, you'd think.
I would hope. Yeah.
Would hope. Well, we'll try to come back. Committee first.
Committee first. We I think
we'll try maybe something for the project cost building and something on these numbers and.
But some more things that we'd like some more information on, I guess. So anybody else have any comments or thoughts yet?
Gus, if you got time after we get done, if you hang around to the end,
yeah.
I'll walk over there with you and we can look at some things.
Sure.
I got some ideas. So
good. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
You want Mike back next time, obviously?
Or if it works for him, whatever, you know, you guys have work around his schedule, too. You'll know more at committee meetings if you have something then and we have enough discussion whether or not you'll need to come back on the agenda on Wednesday,
right.
Our next Wednesday meeting. So,
is Andy here for?
Should we go ahead and move him up on the agenda or not?
I think he's next.
He's next. Okay. And I apologize, Andy. I'm looking at this and I go, maybe he's holding his head down there. Maybe we should.
That's fine.
Okay. We have approve or disapprove the participation of Gage County Sheriff's Office and the Veterans Service Office and the Beatrice Educational Foundation Elementary After School Program. Go ahead.
Andy Crothers, 2205 North 6th Street, Suite 10A, Beatrice, Nebraska. Not here in front of you as my capacity as an attorney. I'm here as the development chair of the Beatrice Educational Foundation. We are applying for what is known as a 21st century grant application to start up an after-school program. And I got to admit that it's kind of nice to be in front of you and have a conversation where the possibility of not hearing Chairman Dorn tell me, Mr. Crothers, your 5 minutes is up. I'm going to try to keep my comments as brief as possible. One of the things that Beatrice has is we have a high number of kids that qualify for free or reduced lunches, and that's about 52% of our school population. And so that tells you that we have some families teetering on the poverty level. And so one of the things that the Beatrice Public School District has done in the last 2 years is had a summer school program. And that summer school program has been a tremendous success. And there is a move towards before and after school programs and summer school programs because the kids that fall into this classification of qualifying for free or reduced lunches, they tend to fall behind in the education process over time. And so we want to close that gap. The public school starting the summer school program was a great start, and it just shows you what the need in this community is. In anticipation of making this grant application, we did a survey of parents, and the parents of 244 children expressed a great interest in having their child enrolled in an after-school program. And the after-school programs are not, you know, glorified babysitting. They have to have a core curriculum that dovetails nicely with what the kids are learning at the elementary school level in their classes. And it's focused on expanded and enhanced learning opportunities. Okay. There is a remedial component. So if you have a child that's in the after school program that is struggling with some classes, there'll be tutors in there to help them. But that's a minor part of the program. The program is more focused on enhanced and expanded learning opportunities. And let me kind of give you an indication. We've all heard of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. The curriculum is going to be designed so that there's more project-based hands-on learning time. And I think it's kind of important to point out a couple of things. One is, as we find out that when a school district starts an after-school program and gets their kids involved in it, one of the things we find out is that over time that education gap closes, where some of these kids who may not get opportunities for these expanded learning opportunities, that gap is closed. They're keeping track with their peers as far as the educational process. One of the other things that the studies bear out is they tend to do better on standardized exams, those kids that participate in the after-school program. The other thing we found out that the studies show is that they have significantly less contacts with law enforcement. So instead of these kids maybe going home to an empty house because both parents work and got a lot of time on their hands to maybe get in trouble, getting them in the after-school program is a great benefit to local law enforcement agents because we have less contacts. Now, as part of the 21st Century Grant application, we have to have community partners. And those community partners are actually kind of coming in and providing instructional services to these kids at the different elementaries. When we're looking at our community partners, obviously the Beatrice Police Department and the Sheriff's Department. I saw that.
I did too.
The Beatrice Police Department and the Sheriff's Office were key components of who we wanted to be involved in this program. And the commitment is not a financial commitment, it's an in-kind commitment. And what we're looking for is on a quarterly basis for the Sheriff's Office to come in and provide public safety and drug and alcohol education awareness. Okay? So we're going to have them in the four elementary schools. So we think the time commitment on a quarterly basis will be somewhere between maybe 4 to 6 hours of coming in and provide. And, you know, I got to thinking about it because I had a conversation with Phil Ditbrenner about veterans, and I thought, you know, our veterans in this county have a tremendous amount to contribute to this program about coming in and sharing their experiences with the kids. And so I approached Phil as well as Gus and Doug about, you know, participating as a community partner. And we would expect Phil and some of, you know, the veterans to come in and do some of that as well. So Janet Byers is our grant writer on this, and she's been working day and night and getting this completed. And so one of the things that we would really enjoy is having Gage County participate as a community partner through the Sheriff's Office and the Veterans Service Office. We think it's an exciting opportunity for this community that I think will strengthen the community, hopefully help these kids further their educational goals, and we see less and less law enforcement contacts. So with that, I'll open it up for questions.
What grades of are you talking about here? What's the?
We're going to start out initially. Our plan is to start out in the elementary level. So it's going to be kindergarten through fifth grade. If the program is a success, we can get it established in all four elementaries, then at some later date, the Educational Foundation would look to expand that program into the middle school.
What length of period is that after school then you're talking about?
It'll be basically 3:30 to 6, and then on the early out days, it'll be 1:30 to 6. So, you know, the kids are going to be in the program. We're excited just due to the fact that most of the communities that we've talked to, similarly situated size, indicate that they have someone between 100 to 150 in the program, and we had parents that would definitely say we're excited about this. So if you break that down between the four elementaries, we're probably going to have about 60 to 65 in each elementary building.
Who's in charge of those children during that length of time then?
Well, it will be the Educational Foundation is proposing this program along with the Beatrice Public Schools. We would hire a site director for each building, and then they would have paid and volunteer staff underneath them for the kids. So it would be the educational foundation that would be running the program.
Are you talking a similar number of hours for the Veterans Office? Or?
You know, that's kind of, I think that's what we'd kind of be looking at. You know, the interesting thing is, in addition to the 21st Century Grant application, the Beatrice Public School District is applying for what is known as an Expanded Learning Opportunity Grant that is focused on designing curriculum for these after-school programs. And the grant application is for four school districts to work together, Grand Island, Beatrice, Centura, and another one that I can't remember. If that grant comes in as well, what we'll be able to do is design curriculum for these after-school programs. And one of the things that the Department of Education really wants to do is they want to push career education down to the elementary level. And so one of the things that we're going to be doing is, with our community partners, is working with them to bring in some career instruction. So, you know, we may have Gus have an investigator in and say, you know, here's what my duties are. Here's the time. Here's the education commitment. Likewise, we would have Phil come in and talk about, him to bring in people to talk about careers in the armed services and those type of things. So, it's going to be, I think, a very exciting program.
Maybe you could get some politicians to come in and career in politicians, because right now we're getting kind of limited. Last time, not hardly anybody ran here or whatever.
It'd
be a good job for Myron. Be a good job for the chair.
What?
Good job for the chair.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I was thinking of the mayor. That's what I was making out.
You know, the interesting thing is we've probably got somewhere between 15 to 20 community partners in the process of signing letters of commitment for the program. You know, what that program is actually going to look like right now, we've got a vision of it, what it may end up looking like at that. But I anticipate, because some of the communities that we've talked to that have the after-school programs, they continually add community partners to their program. So we may have a position for a politician to come in. And, you know, I'm going to say this just because I think it's important. And because obviously in my work, I represent, you know, Mike and I represent several different municipalities, almost every municipality in Gage County. One of the things that I hope we have as part of this after-school program is you know, some type of civics program where we can talk to kids about the concept of tolerance, right? Tolerance is the cornerstone of democracy, and it's a point that you may not agree with some position that you have on the board, but there's that respect that you're entitled to that opinion and position. And we seem to be losing that in our society. And so I think that's important as well. You know,
I see this as a very exciting thing. I hope there's a great opportunity to get those grants, because I think this would be something that, you know, it will have long-lasting effects that you need to start at that young age, and you need to do everything you can. It will pay benefits years to come.
You're investing an in-kind contribution that will pay dividends in the end.
I wish you very much success.
All of the studies all over the country are showing the value of these programs as we go up through the years.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Gary?
Myron, I'd like to get a motion on the table, but then, I mean, I got a couple other questions or whatever too, but just get a motion on the table. So, I approve the participation of the Gage County Sheriff's Office and Veterans Service Office and the Beatrice Educational Foundation Elementary After School Program.
Second.
We have a motion by Lytle and a second by Tiemann. Now more discussion, Gary.
Gus, I assume that you approve of participating in this and want to be a part of it.
Actually, I know very little about it because Andy, I'm meeting with me, and I got called out, so I
talked with Doug Glass.
Yeah, I am familiar with it. We'll do what we can. I think they made it clear to them that if we have somebody there and something happens, we've got to run, we'll have to run.
Yeah. And one of the things is I'm putting together a letter of commitment for both Gus and Phil to look at, and I'll run that past Roger. You know, it's probably a maximum of 6 hours per quarter is what we're looking for.
And honestly, it really didn't matter what Gus said, because as far as I'm concerned, this is a good program. I think it's something we need to do, and I think it'll pay us back over time. And I would assume that there's been some discussion with Christina, and I assume she's involved somehow too.
Yeah. Actually, I have not. I've just briefly discussed it with Christina Lyons. We're going to have both MAPS and teammates be a part of the community partners, MAPS from the alcohol and drug education aspect, and teammates from a mentoring perspective. You know, if some of these kids that are in this after school program would benefit from having a teammates mentor, we want to hook them up with that. So
obviously you've been working on getting the right partners involved.
Yes.
You bet.
One thing that Don just asked me is this just for the low income, or is this for all kids?
It's for everybody. And so, you know, we've had some parents for upper income families indicate a frustration of the fact that, you know, both mom and dad work and they've got little kids and have to send them to daycare, and daycare's not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing any of the daycare providers. In fact, I have a great deal of respect for them. But just when we started talking about this program, we had parents that were basically saying, yeah, I'd love to have my kids in it. Now, I want to stress one thing, is what we're going to do to build sustainability into the program is develop a sliding fee scale. So if you're at that bottom, you're not going to pay anything to be into this program. You know, based on income, you'll pay a little more if you know, because I think the Y is charging $8 a day for their after school program. Our top is probably going to be $10, because once this is a 5-year grant, it'll fund almost 100% of the program cost for the first 3 years, and then it decreases in year 4 and year 5. Now, we can come back for a continuation grant, but we want to build sustainability into this program. And we have reached out to the parochial schools, both to St. John's or St. Paul's and St. Joe's, about participating, and I think there's some interest that, you know, their parents of their school age kids may want to do that as well. So we're not excluding anybody. It'll be open to everybody within the school district and the parochial schools.
Good deal. Any other discussion? Vote. 6-0 in favor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time.
Quite a program.
All right.
Next on the agenda, discuss and approve or disapprove responding to letter from FOP Lodge 45 requesting county to strike Section 2, exclusion of supervisors from the agreement. And Gus, you want to come forward and talk about that a little bit? Everybody should have got a copy of that letter, if I can find it here.
Yes, that was a letter. I didn't get a copy of that, I don't believe. I knew about it when we saw it here at committee meetings. You know, I'm kind of torn on this one here. I guess I don't mind them being in union. I just don't like supervisors being in the same one with subordinates. I think it's a conflict, even for a working road sergeant. I think there still be a conflict there. So I'd rather, as I've indicated before, I like, if they're going to do something, do their own union for supervisors and keep subordinates separate. So that's kind of my train of thought on it anyway.
What we did was we received a letter here dated January 4th. I don't know if I gave Roger one or not, probably not, to the county board, and they are requesting the FOP recognize Section 1 to be amended as following deletion of Section 2, what is the exclusion of the supervisors. They are wanting that back in there. The county recognizes the union as exclusive collecting bargaining agreement with respect to wages, hours, and working condition for all sheriffs, deputies, correction officers, investigators, and then they want to add back in sergeant and lieutenants of the sheriff's office.
So that'd probably be about four sergeants and lieutenant, I think, is what that number would be.
I think that was
Byron, who's they?
This is the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 45.
Union, then.
The union, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The union has sent this to us. On the last page here, it says, the lodge number 45 respectfully requests this issue be addressed by the Board of Supervisors and respond to a request by January 25th. So that's why we have it on the agenda here and hope to reach some kind of decision here maybe today. And I see somebody maybe, Gus, was going to talk on this too?
Yes, sir.
A name and ad.
Sam Christensen. I'm the labor specialist for the National Fraternal Order of Police Labor Service Division. And we've been contracted by FOP Lodge 45 Gage County to assist in representing them in all labor issues. And so,
one quick thing before we go. Part of that is we did receive that letter, and the contract between the county and the union is expires here July 1st.
Correct.
And that's why this is all started already. So, yeah.
Exactly. No, what the letter basically is asking is that you, since the county already voluntarily recognizes who's in the unit, and at one time sergeants and lieutenants were in the unit, we're simply requesting that the county once again voluntarily accept sergeants and lieutenants into the unit. We have a recourse, obviously, if the county chooses not to allow them in, we could seek clarification and recognition by the CIR, Commission of Industrial Relations.
We had committee meetings last Friday, and we did have some discussion then on this letter at that time. One thing we haven't been able to do, and part of our discussion, I'll just bring this up, is we haven't been able to talk to our legal counsel, which is normally Jerry Pigsley, on this letter yet or whatever.
Do you want me to give you Pigsley's response? He's going to say no, and then he's going to ask you to spend some money in having him represent you in the CIR, which is fine.
Yeah. You can give us his response.
I'm just guessing what he is.
Right. We haven't
based on my opinions and what he does in other jurisdictions that I represent.
We realize that may be your opinion, but
that is
we
my
have
opinion,
not.
That's all.
We have not. I just want to let you know we have not had a chance or an opportunity to show this to Jerry Pigsley, and we have not had a chance to visit with him. And this, I think, is also the first. Unfortunately, we didn't bring it up to Roger last Friday when we had our committee meetings either and stuff. So
I'm sorry, I didn't get a copy to him. I actually submitted all those copies 2 weeks ago, yesterday or tomorrow.
It says
and
January 5th.
Was the copy submitted for you, Sheriff? I left it at the
January 5th is the day it was
and
submitted.
I left it to the clerk's office.
Well, was there a reason why you were demanding the January 25th decision?
Simply to get a response so we can, if it's a negative response, we'll file in the CIR.
Okay, but if we were put it off to wait to get opinions from our attorneys, that's not going to have an effect? You would wait?
I guess that would depend on that time frame. I have no idea what that time frame is that you're looking at.
Again, I just suggest, just with Myron, if I had gotten a timely copy of this letter, my first call would have been to Mr. Pigsley. I recognize I am not a labor law attorney. And I would be doing a disservice to this board if I looked at this and says, oh, go ahead. And so, again, you have to take the steps necessary to protect your clients who are the taxpayers and see what's going on, and particularly where we got a negotiations coming right up. That would be one of my concerns, that we'd be make a decision that would have an impact on the negotiations negatively or positively. You know, I don't know. I can't advise this board. But again, we certainly can do a timely response. But I think to go down the road without talking to our legal counsel is worse than getting a white cane and dark glasses and walking down a road.
I would like to make a motion that this be tabled until our what is the next meeting?
February 1st is our next meeting.
February 1st meeting.
Second.
And I'll add a little bit to that. And during that time, we will have consultation with our legal counsel, which we typically. So, okay. We have a motion made by Byers and second by Tiemann to delay the official response until our February 1st meeting.
Now, is it appropriate to have Gus talk to the sergeants and lieutenants and see if this is something they want or if this is something the union wants?
Or can you respond to that?
Is that something we aren't supposed to? I mean,
yeah,
first you of know all, how they don't want to join. If it's just the union that wants them to join, then I must stand behind.
I'll answer your question. We didn't do this on our own. We were approached by people within those ranks that, want to be back in the union. At one point they were in, and somehow they were removed by mutual agreement of the county and the FOP at some point. And the FOP wasn't necessarily happy with that, and so they, and these people went back in, and so that's why we come forward. And as far as the sheriff talking with them, he has the right to give them some information to join, not join. What he can't do is obviously coerce, and I'm sure the attorney would say you can't offer them incentives not to join, stuff like that. That would be interfering. Right. So, but, I mean, I don't have a problem talking to them.
I would say if you'd visit and just see, I mean, what the general consensus is, and then if you, while you talk to Pigsley, maybe see what the option would be to a separate union for them, just if the sheriff's worried about conflict of interest there.
I could respond to that. We're not interested in a separate unit within the FOP. We're interested in one unit.
Now, are they all wanting back in, or is one asking on behalf of the rest of them?
Majority of those that qualify under the sergeant lieutenant have requested.
The majority, but not all.
We didn't poll all of them. We simply have a majority of those people want in. Simply requires a majority vote of the members.
So did you just check with enough to get a majority, or did you
check
with everyone?
I didn't check with anybody. The leadership of FOP 45 was contacted by individuals within those ranks and requested, and they had enough interest that they wanted to get back in, and so that's why we're coming forward with it.
Did I understand you correctly? It's illegal, I assume you meant it's illegal to offer them benefit not to join the union if they were going to make more money not to be in the union?
I'm not an attorney, so I don't want to say it's illegal or not illegal. Obviously, we'd have to look at what action is taken to decide whether that's an inappropriate action.
Eric always asks those type of questions.
Yeah, that'd be a question for Pigsley. I mean, I suppose if you wanted to, you could give them all a 25% increase in wages, and they probably wouldn't care about us anymore. Not that wages is the only issue that's involved here.
Eric.
Sam, did I understand you correctly that the FOP has no interest in having separate units to the bargaining unit?
Our first goal would be to put them into one unit. And obviously, if the CIR says they're not appropriate for one unit, we'd look at doing a second unit. We're asking you to recognize it as one unit. And I'll be honest, if it's denied, we will file in the CIR.
And the reason I ask is that, you know, part of our discussion was that we would like to see separate units even between the road patrol and the jail employees also, just because of the differences in work times and everything else. It would just be a lot simpler to do that separately.
I've represented about 20 places in Nebraska, all of them FOP units. I mean, I have one county, Lincoln County. There's the director of the jail, lieutenants, captains, lieutenants, sergeants, deputies, corrections officers, corrections corporals, corrections, sergeants are all in the same unit. You just put all those different articles in there specific to each one of those categories. I mean, you have some areas in a contract that are going to be general and apply to everyone, and you're going to have areas specific on hours of work, wages, stuff like that that would be separate by classification of employee.
So how do they handle that then? They handle that within the union contract and kind of break down some of those things, or?
Certainly in the negotiations, we would negotiate, attempt to negotiate hours of work for the different positions, wages for the different employee classifications, and whatever else is in that contract that would apply as on an individual position basis.
Okay. Any more questions?
I have maybe just one more, and Jerry will give you this anyway. In Nebraska, what the CIR normally does is that they exclude the top two ranking officials in a jurisdiction, whether that's police department or sheriff's office. And in the sheriff's office, so obviously that's the sheriff and the chief deputy are the two top-ranking management positions that are always excluded from a bargaining unit. Doesn't matter how big or how small that unit is, they're never in that labor group. And in police departments, it's always going to be the chief. If there's a deputy chief, it'll be the deputy chief. Or if there's no deputy chief, the captains, they would not be able to be in the same unit and wouldn't even attempt to get them in. So that's how the CIR looked at that.
Okay. Mine.
Yep.
Not a question. I'd just like to make a statement. Sam, I guess at this point I'm a little concerned. We haven't even entered into negotiations yet. And you walk up in front of us here and right away we're throwing CIR out. I guess I'm a little bit concerned that we're going to go into negotiations at a more contentious than what needs to be. I'm really concerned in the way that you presented yourself today.
I can answer that very easily, Supervisor. The CIR is always my last option. That's why the letter is for voluntary recognition. But I think I would be lax if I didn't tell you that if it's denied, we have options, and that option is the CIR. When it comes to negotiations, I always want to solve at the table. Of the 20-some contracts that I've negotiated, probably 25 contracts I've negotiated in the last 2 years, only one of them have gone to the CIR, and that was Crete, and that was because they had Bill Harding at the table and he didn't want to agree to anything.
I felt your statement was almost a threat to us immediately, that if we didn't do this, you're going to CIR. And, I mean, it wasn't a matter of go through the procedure, but a matter of fact that, hey, you better do this or I'm going to CIR.
Sir, that's the only option we have. If you deny the voluntary recognition, which is what you've already have done with the county, with the FOP 45 is voluntary recognize them, our only option is the CIR. And I think I'd be lax if I did not tell you that we would probably take that step if they're not recognized. You know, you can call it a threat, whatever. It's just simply information I'm giving you.
I'm going to give you some information, too. We're looking at potential outflow of cash in a legal settlement in the next year or two. And we've got really, really good deputies, a really good sheriff's department, a great corrections department. I think it's something we can all be proud of. Now, I think we all agree we'd like to give them the best benefit and pay possible moving forward. And we don't want turnover. We don't want the people changing jobs or going other places. But at the same time, we're not going to be put between a rock and a hard place without the potential consequence of losing people. Because, you know, through negotiations, sometimes we say, well, we're going to do this upward spiral game of the CIR. Eventually, that's going to mean we're going to lose deputies. We're going to lose people, and we don't want to do that either.
I appreciate your point, and that's really why I was here explaining what our next step is. You guys have a monetary decision to make. These guys have simply asked us to get these people into the unit, and our possibility of doing that is CIR. As far as negotiating wages that are not comparable, that's not my game. My goal is always to solve it at the table. You know, my last thing I want to do is spend my employer's money and your taxpayers' money. I think we're much better off coming to an agreement at the table, and hopefully we do that. Almost every place I go and have been contracted with to represent, the last thing that most of those people are concerned about are wages. Deals with hours of work, other handling of the employees. That's why people form up. Wages isn't the big issue a lot anymore.
And that was something that we found in the last negotiation.
Yep.
And I think, again, I just hope that our negotiations won't be contentious with your addition to the room, because in the past we have had that problem.
It won't be, sir.
And I'll say this, that most of this year will come up, or we can continue our discussion once we get to negotiations. We appreciate the letter here. We did not follow, I guess, get this all timely, and we just discussed it last Friday and the first time. And so we haven't had a chance to talk with Jerry, and he there's a good possibility. We have not officially hired him yet either as our legal counsel for our negotiations, but there's a good possibility of that. So until we visit with him, and that's why the motion was made the way it was, we don't feel like we can make a good choice at this time. But we want you to know that, too, and we will have it on our agenda on the 1st to have a vote on this letter and so on. So
I appreciate that. I can't make a decision on whether the 25th is going to be the deadline. Yeah. I have to talk to the members of the FOP. I don't make any decisions without their approval, but I will let them know that the 1st is.
Yeah. Don points this out. Our last board meeting was January 4th, so we would have had things have to have things fall in place right to have it at, and had it to prepare an answer at this here board meeting and stuff, so which we did not do. So.
Yes, I simply waited until after the 4th to see who the chairman was going to
be. Oh, you did?
That's the only reason.
That kind of pushed it back 2 weeks.
And that pushed it, yeah. Then you really didn't make a wise decision there. So, yeah.
Well, I don't choose. I have no problem with anybody being the chairperson.
So we do have a motion on the floor to delay a response until the February 1st meeting. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? Vote 6-0 in favor. Okay, approve or disapprove resolution to acknowledge transfer of ownership, maintenance, and control of roadway bridge number C00341363 along Hoyt Street over Bear Creek to the City of Beatrice. And I think I'll let Gaiman maybe explain this.
This is resolution 1701.
1701.
First one
for 17.
For this year.
Back in on April 7th, 2014, when the city annexed in BSDC, they also annexed in the road just on the north side of BSDC on Hoyt Street, and the bridge that is over Bear Creek was also annexed into the city at that time. The city had forwarded an email that they had talked to NDOR, and they are required to get a resolution from the county which states that they have taken over the ownership, maintenance, and control of the roadway bridges which they have been annexed into the city. And that's what this resolution is for.
And the city needed this for some of their paperwork, and I guess we'd never... When it got transferred originally, this never got done.
No.
And we probably didn't know it was supposed to be done. Nobody did.
Nope.
But when, as they're visiting with the Department of Roads, Department of Roads is requesting that they have this resolution in place. So, truthfully, we wanted to include two or three other bridges in here.
Yep.
But they limited it to this one right now. So we'll see if going forward we can't maybe slide some through with some other contract we get with them. So, but I don't think they'll let that happen either. But so that's why this is coming forward.
Yes.
It's basically a paperwork project that needed to be completed. So,
yep.
Any more discussion? We're going to give them another bridge someday, maybe, hopefully. Vote.
No, you have
a motion. Oh, I need a motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Hill made a motion to approve, seconded by Jurgens. Vote 6-0 in favor. Okay, discuss approve or disapprove representative to the Blue River Area Agency on Aging Board. Last time we had in consent agenda that we were going to maybe have Dan Hawkins on there, we pulled that off. Had discussion about that. Decided not to vote on that. We have it on this agenda to maybe approve. We've had a lot of conversation. I have. I know other board members, too, have had a lot of conversations with Blue River Area Agency. I visited with Zoe out there several times in the past 2 weeks. They really wanted a representative from the northern part of the county. Did visit with people, visited with two different people up in the Cortland area about the possibility of Richard Douglas, and did visit with him. He would agree to serve on the board. Rich Douglas has been, he is part or chairman. I don't know if he's chairman, but he's part of the Cortland Community Improvement Association, which was very active in getting the Meals on Wheels up there. They do meet once a week up there for Meals on Wheels and have 30 to 40 people show up. He was very supportive of that. He knows and understands what the agency does. Did agree to become a member of that, so that's the name that we're bringing forward now. I know Dan Hawkins had submitted that he would be on there, but right now, like I said, the agency, because of our location of the other three people we have one in Beatrice, and we'll still have two down there in Blue Springs, Wymore area that are on that board out of our four people, they really wanted some representation from the north part of the county. So that's why
I would move to approve Mr. Harger.
Mr. Douglas.
As a new member of the Blue Rivers Area Agency on Aging Board.
Do I have a second?
Second.
And this will be a 3-year term for that board. I know we had some conversation about Rex, but Rex has not turned in anything that he's withdrawing from that board or anything. So that we'll leave that the way it is. And same way with Dan Hawkins. At this time, we'll not have him as a member of that board. So,
okay. And at this time, Rex is still a member of the board and will remain so.
At this time, Rex has one more year on that board. I know Zoe sent out some emails. I don't know if everybody got them or not, but that explaining the terms, but we have four people. The county has four people on that board. So, and we do contribute a fair amount of money to the Blue River Area Agency, but they do a lot of work. They have the Meals on Wheels and all of those, deliver them, and then have different areas where they have meetings and all that. So, any more questions? Did Eric leave? I know Gary's still here. Oh, Eric's here.
Eric is here.
Any more questions? Vote. 6-0.
Gary's out.
Oh, Gary's not in the room. Okay, 5-0 in favor.
Last vote was 5-0 too, because Gary stepped out.
Donna's corrected me too. The last vote, because Gary was not in the room here. The last vote on that resolution was 5-0 with Hill and Bauman not voting then.
Byron?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a comment. For some reason, I got a bad taste in my mouth.
What is that?
You figure it out.
I know. Just because I've chewed on you once for leaving early. Never mind.
He's a murderer.
I know. Gary took a phone call and he's out in the hallway, so I seen he didn't leave. Next, discussion of extension office position, county or university. The reason I put this on there is we did have Dave Varner here with us, back in probably November, and we had discussion about that. I guess wanted to get more, and I haven't visited with people individually, more of the direction this board, before we go back out and talk to them out at the extension office, the direction that this board would like to see that position. Do we want to go ahead? Because we need to make a decision and get the move on it. Do we want to go that over to the university, or do we want to try and continue it as a county position? And it would be the pay is going to be the same. I'll just say that, or at least what we're looking at right now, the pay is going to be really similar. But you know what issues we have out there that's ran by university employees. We have so many county employees and then this position, whatever. But I just wanted some comments from people, county or university. Which way do we want to head?
Either way, whichever it goes. My recommendation, the way I'd like to see it go, is there is a set dollar amount. If it goes to the university, this is what we pay the university. If their costs go up or down, that's wonderful. It doesn't affect us. This is what we're going to contribute. We're still meeting or exceeding our obligation to the extension office, which I know we all support. This is the dollar amount that we're going to contribute to this position.
We'll put Eric in charge of negotiations with the university when we draw up the contract. So yep.
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. No, Gary.
I'm for the university option. I can't just say flat out university for sure. Just, and I want to make sure that the programs and what are offered to the in that with that position aren't damaged in the process. I think it's a good program. I think what we do for our youth and in them through the extension and everything else and through the 4-H programs and all that stuff that works together out there, I think is really good, and I don't want to see that hurt by any move that we would make. And so, you know, as long as we don't create issues there, I think the university is the way for us to go.
That's my thought.
That's your thought, too. More than anything, I kind of wanted a general idea because John and I will go out and visit with him next week. We'll get a hold of him and go out and visit with him so that we can proceed towards that area. Dave Varner, he did get moved on up there at the university, and I have a new contact person, so I will get a hold of him, and we will try and get that moving, too, or whatever and stuff. Just so you know, we haven't been out there to the extension office and visited about them that 100%. We're going to try and go either way. We've had all along, we've just had discussion and everything, and trying to get a better handle on what it would entail if we did move that position. Basically, we would pay approximately all the same dollars. It's just that then university, she would be exempt. We wouldn't have this overtime issue and not working different hours and all that. So we will go out there and visit with them and see if we can start maybe to get that ball rolling and get that done. Discussion on County Highway, the call-out policy. And we're bringing this up so that we know we've had some discussion in the past. Friday we did have some discussion and everything, and Terry wasn't here, and Terry had some comments for me. And we don't necessarily need to approve anything, but I hopefully on the next meeting we can have something to approve. But just so I said Terry had some good thoughts on it, and I think, Terry, I'd like to have your comments on here.
All right. I guess I'll go back a year ago maybe, and I thought, well, the probably thing to do is pay the overtime. But since then, I guess I've changed my mind. The private workforce out there doesn't operate that way. You have to work the 40 hours. I know it where my wife worked at a nursing place. She said you had to work the 40 hours, work it before you got paid any overtime. If you got called in Saturday, Sunday, whatever that would be. And the reason why I switched my mind is this. Anytime you're on a job for so long, you get used to it. You get used to comfortable with the job, and maybe, and I'm no different. But you don't appreciate what you got. I'm telling you, that's a good job down there. Those people have to work for the private industry for a while, and they would be tickled to death to come back. This, to me, is a minimal thing. It's not a sacrifice. I guess and Galen's going to disagree, but I don't care. I mean, that's his job to back his men. I get that. But in this case, in this particular instance, I think if you don't work the full 40, you don't get overtime.
And I guess I sure taking comments from anybody else. What my plan is next Monday when we have committee meetings, we will make a determination of how we want to word that and change that. And then at our next meeting, we will make any adjustments or anything to the call-out policy. And, Galen, we're not doing this to challenge those guys down there or anything. Part of what we're doing is trying to visit, and we sure welcome any of their comments, too, or whatever. And we sure, if you'd like to make comments now or later, however,
okay.
Whatever you want to do.
Can I add to that now? With that being said, I'll go down.
Yep.
Myron and I talked about both of us going down, and we'll address the people.
Yep.
That doesn't bother me.
Yep.
I mean, whatever decision we make, I'm not saying it's whatever. We'll talk to them, and quite frankly, Galen, if you want to tell them
this is what Jurgen said. Maybe they're leaning this way. If you want to go talk to him, go talk to him. No problem.
Wait.
Tell him to come see me. They know where I'm at.
Call us or whatever. I mean, we're not saying this is it, take it or leave it. You know what I mean? Number one is we haven't approved any changes. We haven't changed anything yet. But part of what we're doing is the past couple of years we've had, for whatever reason, we've had when this issue's come up, then we've always had to have a discussion. We need to have it one way or another. We need to have it down here so that when this issue comes up, we don't have this discussion as a board.
I think this is the way Matt explained this to me as far as what they anticipated it was anyway. But just so, I mean, there wouldn't be any change. It's just clarifying it. That's pretty straightforward. And then call-out policy, you would not want to change. It would just still be that's automatic time and a half when you get called back in. And there's that minimal on there, so you automatically get X number of dollars, whether it takes you a half hour or 2 hours.
But what we need to clarify is if you get called out on a Friday after work, I shouldn't say that. It came up when they got they had to come into work that Saturday, and some of the people hadn't worked during the week to get their 40 hours. Basically, what we're saying is, you will be working the 40 hours during the week before when you come in on a Saturday or Sunday or whenever, before those are going to be time and a half hours. They're still going to get paid, correct? They still will get paid if they work it, but they won't be at the time and a half.
That's what they should. Called in after work, they've gone home, middle of the night, that's automatically time.
Well, now, there's certain things, and that Galen decides when it's a call out. Say, for instance, we have the people that basically are on call and they have to call out for flooding or whatever. That's not in the 40 hours, okay? That still is call out pay.
But, Myron, I mean, if they take sick day Monday and then the rest of the day, and they come in on Saturday, do they get regular pay?
They get regular
yes.
pay.
Okay,
they
it's just not the overtime pay.
They don't get the overtime pay until they have the 40 hours.
Correct. And that's not considered call out because it's in the normal scope of duties.
That's right. That's not considered call out because right up here at the top, it says the county highway superintendent may issue call out. Well, it says call out pay, but the county highway superintendent will designate when it's call out.
Okay. I guess the point that for myself, I really need clarified on what you just said. If somebody during the work week, say only has 30 hours in, say on a Saturday morning that we have a snowstorm hit on Friday night, they're called and told, okay, you come into work Saturday. Now, does that fall under the call out even because they don't have their 40 hours? See, that's where the confusion
is. That's where the confusion is.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Call out to me is more than emergency situations. Snowstorm isn't that's part of the scope of the normal work duties. Plowing snow is part of the normal work duties, correct?
Yeah, the way it is now, Monday through Friday, that's their scheduled working hours, yes.
The work week is Sunday to Sunday. So plowing snow is normal work duties. So if they have to plow snow on Saturdays, while it's unfortunate that it happens on a weekend, we can't control Mother Nature. So if they got to come in and plow snow on a Saturday, that's not call out. That's normal scope of duties.
Well, the only thing that I see that they see, it's not their regular working day of Monday through Friday. And you say it's Sunday through Saturday. I understand what you're saying. But that's where, and I guess if you come down and explain it and all and get it through their heads, I don't have a problem with it. But I'm just saying that when you're asking somebody to come in on their day off, and work and not pay them overtime, that's a very hard sale.
Yeah. You could go the other way, though, and say, well, we're saying we're going to pay you when you didn't work. If they took that day off on a Monday or whatever, we could go the other way and say, well, we're paying you for a sick day, or we're paying you for a holiday day, or we're paying you for any of this stuff. I mean, if they want to swap paid holidays for overtime on Saturday, Sunday, I'd make that deal.
I'll give you an example that from where I work and in the day-to-day. Okay, kind of the same deal. In the grain elevator, we work with grain every day, and that's part of our normal Monday to Friday duties. But we also load trains. And trains are about like the weather. They show up whenever the heck they please. And, you know, if we got to load a train on Saturday or a Sunday, you know, it stinks because the guys go sometimes 2 and 3 weeks without a weekend because they end up having to work those. But it's the same deal. If they choose to be sick or take sick time or they're off throughout the week, then they end up working them cruddy hours, same deal. They're in the same boat, and it's a lot the same. I mean, it's kind of the, you know, it's outside.
And they get paid their regular salary.
They get paid their regular salary, but they don't get the overtime until they hit the 40 hours.
And visiting with Pam Bourne, and I left my notes at home on that. I will find them. Visiting with Pam Bourne, what Gary described is how the labor law state it should be.
Right.
Now, however, she said you can make exceptions to that, and that's what if. To make an exception to that, you'd have to have some kind of policy like we have with our call-out pay, and that needs to be in that policy then. But the labor laws are exactly as Gary described it. It's Sunday through Sunday, so that's part of that job.
Myron, I guess what's the difference between coming out and pushing snow on a Saturday or Sunday or coming out during the summer after a big flood and have to put up barricades and everything? The flood, we're calling call back, but the pushing snow, we're not. I mean,
that's part of your callback.
Okay, I know, but what's the difference between the two, I guess? I'm just trying to...
It's all the same.
Well, we
I'm
do
just
have,
trying to get it through my head, I
but
guess.
But we do so have... Well, Terry, we do have a person down there that is basically kind of on call. One of your foremen is on call. They're on call, okay? And that's to me that's a little different because that person is on call, and when he gets called back outside of his normal hours, then he's getting, you know, if he has to come in at 11 o'clock at night to do barricades for 2 hours, now that's part of that job too. Okay, now that's just one way of looking at it. I did visit with, we have several guys in Adams that work for the state of Nebraska. Drive the trucks. And I visited with him, what's the state of Nebraska's policy? Saturday and Sunday this last weekend when they did ice, he says you had to work your 40 hours or you didn't get paid overtime. But he said, I says, well, you'll probably be hoping you don't have to work the holiday. He says, oh, God, no. He says, we do anything we can to work the holiday.
Yeah.
That's 2.5.
2.5 times.
And that was his comments. But he said, no, if we haven't worked our 40 hours, he says, it's always been that way at the state. If we haven't worked our 40 hours and we have, even if they have to, in that 40-hour work week, he says, if you have to, Tuesday night, you're out pushing snow all night, he says, they give you the option. If you want to, you can use the comp or whatever. But he says, most people don't. They'll make sure they work the 40 hours so they get time and a half for that, pushing that snow. But he says, if you haven't worked your 40 hours that pay period or that period, he says, we don't get time and a half at the state. So that's part of the job.
Until they do work 40 hours. If it's call out, is only the person that's on call. Is that right?
And that person on call gets $50 a week, right?
For taking the on-call duty,
right,
yes.
They get that in addition.
But if you have a call-out policy and there's nothing applies, then why have it? I'm just trying to, because I know where Galen's at. If you play this on his shoulders, he's not liking that. And I don't blame you, because I'm a little, if it's Mother Nature, I'm following all what you're saying, and I agree with you.
Is everybody, you got enough copies for everybody, or did everybody have one of these?
Well, no, I'm just saying, I think, if and that's what I'm sensing here, if you got a call out, say what it is. So you know the call, or you know the decision, and your people do too. So there ain't going to be this argument, this gray area, because that's where...
Well, I mean, the thing about it is,
it's interpreted
differently. It is, because it's hard for us to know what's call out, what's over.
There's one person on call, but it might be a big emergency of that. He might be calling, he's got 2 or 3 pounds down the line that he, the
the guy that's on, I mean, it is maybe just one person. It could be four people got to go out there and do something. Tree over the road, whatever, storm damage, you know.
Right.
They go out. It isn't going to be a one-person guy out there. You wouldn't do that and just send one person. I don't think, and do you?
No, it just depends on what...
It depends on what it is.
What it is, yes.
Could we make it something like call-out? It's something that happens outside the hours of 8 and... You guys work 7 to 4. Is that right or no?
7 to 3:30.
7 to 3:30. Something that happens outside of the hours of 7 and 3:30 that's a non-continuation of the day. So not we're work at 3:30 and we stayed an extra 2 hours. But because, I mean, the call-outs for people are at home, they've gone back home, and then they get called back in. Could we do that? So these are the hours. It still follows that Sunday through Saturday plan, the seven-day week. Here's their normal working hours. Because even if it's on a Saturday and it's during the day, if they don't know they're coming in, I mean, if we know there's a chance of snow or something and we're going to be coming in at some time, I would say, okay, we follow that 40-hour rule. It's once they go home and they're outside of their normal day. If there's a flood, if there's a car accident, everybody's in bed, 1 o'clock in the morning, and they get called back in, that's call-out pay.
We can do whatever we want to, but the way we are right now, we get enough questions or issues arise about this that we're getting a visit like this. So whatever we do, we need to come so that everybody understands what it entails, because we left some here open to interpretation.
One of the questions we had was, like, on a Friday, they were told to start early on Saturday, or on Thursday they were supposed to start early on Friday. Is that overtime? Because they're continuing their day. What's that call out? Those are the questions I get asked of me. I bring them to you because I don't know your interpretations of this.
You know, going back to the origination of this call out policy, I think it was a good... It was a good gesture from this board saying we appreciate some of the extra work that you do, and we want to, and some of these times we want to be able to compensate you when you do step over the line and do more than you're called upon your normal duties. But I mean, really, it's created nothing but a hassle.
Yes.
And quite honestly, my vote, if it was up to me, we would just do away with the call out policy completely and go back to the way it was. Either you work 40 hours and then you start getting overtime, or you don't.
I think I could agree with that, with maybe the exception if they are called back up to put in a barricade or something, they need something as far as their an extra hour for travel or something.
Well,
or,
you have that person on call, okay? If he gets called back in, that person...
But he probably ain't the only one doing it a lot of the times.
What's that?
He's not the only one that's maybe putting up barricades or...
No, in fact, at night, normally we always request the on-call guy and at least one person go with him out at night, just for the safety
factor. I think
that's
a good idea, too.
Just for that.
So, Galen, why don't we, rather than having a call-out policy for two people, why don't we just, okay, we got an on-call and we got his helper, why don't we pay both of them on-call duty pay?
Well, that's fine and dandy, but there's sometimes, depends on what it is for. If you get a bunch of trees down, you might have the whole department working, called out to go to work. Yeah. Or, you know, it just depends on the severity of it.
And
there's a lot of different things here. It's just not like in a snowstorm. Basically, all the truck drivers, and if it's real bad, all the motor graders work. And then you have a loader operator. So you have the, at least half of the department in a snowstorm, at least, or more, come in to work. Just depends on how bad the storm is. So it's just not one or two. You know, it's usually always two, you know, at night, or when they're called out to put up a sign at night or whatever. Now, the rest of it just kind of goes with whatever the severity of the call is.
Okay, I guess my next question would be then, okay, we got the guy that's on call.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know what his duties are? Why? How do we know how he's getting called out or what he's getting called out for?
Because the dispatch has a list of the on-call people the week that they're on. Mm-hmm. Okay, when a call comes in to them, dispatch calls the person on that list, and then it's up to him to take care of that. Or if he has questions, they give me a call. Or if they can't, for some odd reason, can't get a hold of somebody, then I usually get the call.
I think a lot of times I know, like, Gus will call down or call dispatch and say, we need barricades up, you know, whatever. He'll flag it. And then I assume dispatch then, you know, contacts you or the.
Or once in a great while, we'll get a direct call from the sheriff's department and say, hey, we got an incident out here. We need some barricades. We need this road closed down. So they take care of it.
Because there's some accidents we don't need to.
No, there's some that.
Normal duties also.
I think we have some discussion in next committee meeting. We need to come back and we need to be prepared.
Make sure it don't snow over the weekend for a couple of weeks, will you?
All right. Well, no, we had that discussion Friday and how we handle that and everything. So we had that ahead of time, you know, or whether we're at the holiday and stuff, you know. So, but I mean, it's something that there is enough confusion now that we need to try and get something better than what we have. I'll just say that.
Well, and it's already in the handbook. If you work holiday, no matter what you work during that week, if you work on a holiday, you get your two and a half times.
Two and a half times. The holiday.
Holiday.
Time and a half
plus
your holiday.
Galen, Elm, we're having a discussion. I'd welcome any of them to come down and see me.
Tell them that instead of that, because we don't know yet.
I mean, come give me their thoughts. Maybe they're something not thinking of here.
Well, 99% of the people down there understand that if you're called, say on a Saturday or whatever, from when you're normally not working or at night, that goes underneath call-out pay. There's no ever the part where they don't understand is if during the week if they don't have their 40 in and then you have to work over, that's the part they don't understand. Okay, because you won't get overtime until you get your 40 hours in. That's the part we have the problem with. It ain't about getting called out at night or getting called on a Saturday or Sunday to put up barricades or whatever, because we know that's call-out pay. It's that the line between the 40 hours during the week when somebody's used a couple days vacation and then has to work what we call overtime for whatever reason, they don't understand, well, you got to have your 40 hours in. That's where this problem comes in.
I think there's a general consensus on that part with us. It's just how do we give them a bonus for coming in outside of that time?
I guess I'm confused now because I didn't realize that Saturday working Saturday was call-out pay. Just working at all on Saturdays, call-out pay.
Down there, that department, that's the way it's been for years. They're under the impression that that's call-out.
They're on a Monday through Friday week.
They're on, Galen, one at the one meeting here talked about that because you made the comment something about the normal 5-day work week working outside, that's call-out pay. Well, no, when I visited with Pam Bourne, that's not the way the labor rules are, the labor laws. The labor laws are it's 7-day work week. It's nothing with the 5 days.
Somewhere when we put this call-out policy in, somewhere I missed the boat then because I thought we were putting call-out in for when somebody got called back out to do that menial, that little issue on an evening or something like that. It wasn't normal scope of duty. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I think it all needs to still stay in the discussion.
No, Gary, that the way they've handled it down there has been going on for years, okay? It wasn't as a result of this call-out. Since we've had this, though, that's kind of maybe when it's brought it to light a little bit, I guess. I don't know. Depends on what you want to say.
For as long as I've worked for the county, it's always been the way we've been doing it for 37 years.
Yeah.
It's always been handled that way down there.
Now, that's where the, like Galen and everybody's talked about, that's where the issue comes about, though, because that's the way it's been handled down there. When it comes up to Don's office then, because in our handbook and other things, or I shouldn't say our handbook, because of labor laws and all of that, kind of always look at it a different way. So that's when the discussions came about, and that's when it's always came to the board, and then we've always had another discussion. We need to get that.
This is new to me, too, then. So they could have a 20-hour week during the week and work full day on Saturday and get overtime.
Yes.
And they could get overtime on Saturday and Sunday and call in Monday because they're tired.
Stuff needs to go out the window in a hurry on some of that.
Well, no, but that's why we're having the conversation, because this, we don't have it. I call it, we don't have it worded right.
I think I would just suggest you have option A, kind of the way it's been, on option B, the way you thought it was, and then you can look at these things together. Now, you're still going to, I think, what Terry's talking about and John here, if you change it to option B, which is the way you thought it was, you're going to have to talk to the guys down there. Otherwise, yeah. It's going to be not a happy campers.
We have
that's the last thing you need is another
dipping,
FOP.
Double dipping overtime.
I shouldn't say that. We're not on the record. Well, yeah, you see Sam for another reason.
This is the last thing I'll say on it, and this I moving forward. This is the way I feel, and I'm not gonna waver. I think we do away with the call out policy, and we move forward that way. Quite frankly, Galen, this happens about, like you said, maybe 1% of the time that it actually becomes an issue where somebody has been off, hasn't got their 40 hours in, and then they're working weekend or an evening or something. It's a very, very minimal amount of time. We've over-legislated. We've put a policy out there that we did not need. It's created all these issues for you and us both, and I think that it just needs to go away. And when those issues arise, while it stinks, you know, it shouldn't happen to the same person over and over and over again. If it does, then maybe that person needs to work more often instead of always being off and then not getting their time and a half when they have to work over the weekend or in the evening.
Maybe he needs to find a new job.
I don't want to, again, this isn't something I want to make contentious, but I think we've created a policy that's created a lot more issues than needed to be out there.
We have. And that's a very good point. We regulated something to try and help, and it caused more issues than what it's solving. Yeah.
I agree.
After a long enough period of time, it created more issues. So,
well, the handbook is one of those things. And I mean, Dawn, you can't imagine how much time she puts in on that. I mean, she gets suggestions from Norma. She gets them from Pam. She gets them from other counties. And the officials just love to sit down with her and talk about these things. And when you change little policies, you find that it affects other policies. Yep. And I think that might have what happened here. I mean, the concept that everybody struggles with is the work week isn't 5 days. It's 7. And if you don't get that, and I have trouble with that too, you know, with my employees, because to me it's natural. As the elected official, it's 7 days. I mean, but for the people that are 8 to 5 or 7 to 3:30, it's Monday through Friday almost all the time. So they don't, when they get called out Saturday, Sunday, that's overtime. That's a tough concept to. Mm-hmm.
What did we fill out for last Friday? Because we weren't technically, that wasn't our week. We came in Friday because Monday we were off.
Monday was a holiday.
Yeah, do we fill something out for Friday? Because that's
guys,
outside our normal
supervisors,
work
week. Yeah, go ahead. You got your hours.
You get called out.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. Your pay is the same. It don't matter when you worked, okay? Yeah. I'll help you out with that concept. Okay. We're going to.
I'm the same as Terry and Myron. If you want me down there so they can throw daggers at me, that's fine. And there's going to be some of them that are just flat out aren't going to agree with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm 100% on board with Terry. That's a good job down there, and it's part of it. I mean, how many times is it going to really happen to a person? We see it what, twice a year, 3 times a year maybe.
Depends on the year.
Yeah, I know.
On the year,
I know that.
An average.
But you know that going into that job, it's just like somebody that we hire over there. You go into that job knowing you might be loading trains 10 weekends in a row.
I'll bring this up. This has been years ago, but one year we had a state guy up there, and I gave him such a bad time at Christmas because he worked so much snow before Christmas. And I says, boy, I bet you're glad, you know, when the snow's going to end. He says, oh, no. He says, we're going to have the best Christmas we've had in a long time. You wouldn't be surprised all the gifts that overtime paid for.
Yeah.
I mean, that was his thought. You know, I mean, he wasn't complaining that he had to work, but that was before Christmas. And if I remember right, that year after Christmas, he maybe did one time. You know, you don't know with snow.
Nope.
Nobody knows.
Nope.
That's why I always say we work 7 to 6 or until we get done.
So you get done.
Those are your normal hours.
We will be visiting about this then on our fall, on our Monday committee, and hopefully we can come to some kind of decision at our next meeting, Galen. Okay. We'll have it on the agenda again at our next meeting.
Don't leave, Galen. I've got it. I should have asked this earlier, but is the Wymore building anything you want to really be involved in as far as the specs of taking it down?
Wymore building.
Yeah.
The scope of work thing. Asking a lawyer to write scope of work on demolition of a building is not the most intelligent thing we could do. Oh,
that's really out of my expertise. Okay.
Well, and that's really kind of what I thought, you know.
All right. Well, I just relied on you.
Yeah. I mean, if there's one building out there by itself, you could go knock it down, you know, but, you know.
Who do you suggest that I talk to Davey?
We've got a supervisor that might be.
Oh.
Have some expertise.
And Dave, and maybe.
Okay.
And Andy gave you the contract that Weimar used, right?
So, Greg Butcher maybe would have
to. Get on with Butcher.
I've got a copy of his deal that I did, or he did, for Main Street down there.
Oh, man, yeah. And you let me get you one of the other ones, too, that's not like that one.
Yeah, that's like, it's like 10 pages.
I mean, have Eric. Yeah.
And I'm not folding that, because, I mean, as it turns out.
It was a nightmare.
I understand, but that one, I just, like I said, I could overlook something. I mean, yeah. Greg's was very, it had stuff in there with the hazmat and all kinds of stuff like that, which are just checklist stuff. But I decide somebody that is much more familiar with that, I'll certainly work with Eric.
Eric, should you, okay. you've been involved with those type of contracts before, yep. So okay. You maybe got some copies.
Beatrice has a very minimalistic one, too.
What's that?
Beatrice has a very minimalistic one for, I don't know, they do 6 to 8 demos a year. The only one that's a contract like that is that one on court. Everything else is very simple. They're one-page contracts.
All right.
And
maybe you can make sure you give him a copy.
Yeah, I should have said something earlier, and I didn't really think about it right at the time. And
yeah, because your name was brought up maybe helping with that, so we're trying to get you out of that.
As far as getting the building down, we could definitely get the building down, but all the rest of that stuff, that's out of my... Yeah.
All right. Hey. Thank you. Thanks, Don.
Yep.
Next up, approve or disapprove 2017 board committees and appointments. Did visit with everybody on the list, I think, or you planned on it, or thought I did. I'll just make this comment. I made the same comment to, I think, everybody. Those committees, it's very important, I think, to have the committees yet so that during the year, as we maybe have some issues arise, we can say, I'll call it this way, when we have negotiations this year with FOP, that committee is going to be in charge of that or whatever. But they don't carry quite the same necessity of having committees like when we had them before the legislature enacted the law they did. When we had it upstairs and we had only 4 people could be in that room at a time, you know, now we have a committee structure here where everybody can come and go, and I think I really like it where everybody can be more involved and take part in what they want to. So I see them as important, but I don't see one person being on this one or that one quite as the importance that we had before. So, entertain a motion to approve the committee committees and appointments as
presented
as last year.
So moved.
Motion by Hill, second by Juergens. Discussion, vote, 6-0 in favor. Discuss and approve or disapprove 2017 Board of Supervisor standing rules. And I know Matt had the question.
Matt had a question on number 7. He was he raised that, so, you know, it's one of those that probably has some history behind it that it isn't necessarily applicable to this group. I would just note if anybody's concerned about that, Rule 3 basically gives the chairperson the right and authority to preserve order. So if somebody's dominating, you know, with a lot of talk, and you can't quiet them up, you could say, okay, let's move on.
I see no need to change it. I mean, and Matt's right, it's not an issue now, but that don't mean Aaron King would get out of line.
Right.
And again, it's really up to the chairperson, which I know he's pretty difficult to deal with, but... He's about easy going.
He might have brought up the sheriff's office more than twice today, and I only need to hear it twice.
They asked me to look at it. To me, you've got something in there that's still.
Gary, I sit on the other side of the aisle, and I say that we've over-legislated again, and that needs to be stricken, and the chairman needs to have a set and take care of the situation when it arises.
Strike rule number 7. Are you going to make that a motion then, or?
I think that's what we discussed, wasn't it?
Yep.
Let me read that one again.
Yeah, read it.
I,
Read it out loud once.
Yeah,
I don't have it.
That's my motion. I move that we strike rule number 7, no member shall speak more than twice on the same subject and not to exceed 5 minutes each time without leave of the board.
Second.
We have a motion by Lytle and a second by Tiemann to strike rule number 7 from the standing rules. Any more discussion? Vote. 5 in favor with Hill voting against.
I'm going to vote to not adjourn, too.
And I'm the problem.
Byron, I think you're losing control.
I know I am. We're gone too long. When we go this long, we lose control. Okay.
I need to approve the remaining.
Right.
So now we need
any
to.
Other changes, then?
Any other changes? Thank you, Roger. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
We will update on the appointments. We'll read 2017 then on the
right.
The next page.
Okay.
We'll update that under Rule 18 for the standing committees. We'll update that. Okay. Any other?
No, yeah.
Any other changes? Apparently not. Okay.
I entertain a motion then to approve or disapprove the Board of 2017 Board of Supervisors standing rules.
With that removal.
So moved with that amendment. With
item number 7 being voted on to remove. Tiemann made the motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Hill. Vote.
Was it Hill or Jurgens?
Hill.
Jurgens. Hill. It was Jurgens, wasn't it?
It was Jurgens. Okay. Second by Jurgens.
Jurgens.
Got it. You didn't and recognize him after 10?
Vote.
I did.
6-0. I didn't read it in, though.
Byron,
you interrupted me.
The program here. We've got standing rules.
My ear told me it was Jurgens, but your voice said it.
My ear told me it was Hill, so yeah. So you had to argue with me, so we had to wait and re-vote again. Okay, approve or disapprove having chairman sign conflict of interest letter with Butler, Gatler, Galter, and O'Brien. I'm not sure what this is.
So basically what it is, we've signed them before, it's saying that you recognize as a board that Pat and those folks represent you, the county, also Mr. Searcy and Dr. Price. And that at this point they're saying there's no conflict in doing that. And if there ever something does come up, you recall that one of the other attorneys we were working with said we should have done this 100 years ago. Well, and I said something that I probably shouldn't have said at that point. But anyhow, this basically acknowledges they've told you this, and if that becomes comes into fruition, they will tell you, okay, we have a conflict now. And then we'll all have to sit down at the table. You'll see that Mr. Searcy and Dr. Price also signed this acknowledgement letter or a similar one. And it's just Mr. O'Brien and his folks covering their bases, and they have disclosed this to us. So I would advise you to acknowledge it and authorize Mr. Dorn to sign this letter.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Tiemann, second by Jurgens. Discussion? Vote. 6-0. 5-6-0. I thought Fred Bauman. 6-0. Hill didn't vote against it.
That's what I thought when I looked at it.
I was waiting for Hill to vote against it. I will just give a quick update a little bit on that. Unless somebody has something for close station, I don't see a need for it. They did file the briefs on last Friday. That did get filed. Now I guess the timeline goes as it goes. They apparently were originally supposed to have a month to reply to those briefs. It was 80 pages from our attorneys. I got to read it. I don't know if you did. I got to read it. I was impressed by it. The only thing I'll say is I thought it was a little long. Yeah, but I'm not an attorney. But they did make some. One of the things they hammered on was the innocence and that getting kept bringing up, you know, by the other side. They really hammered on that. And then a lot of the discussion was about the fact that their last ruling that the sheriff was a policymaker and that I think will be what some of the appellate briefs will be on too. But
yeah, I got a couple, a copy of a draft copy of an amicus
not
brief. I'm trying to think which firm that was from. Anyhow, that's what they're hammering on.
That's what they're on too. So yeah, it, but they, for a lawyer, it might have been interesting to read the whole 80 pages. But for me, they I thought they made some really valid points. Now my comment is, we'll see what the other side brings up and how they argue against that. You know, the other quick thing was, I just want to bring up a little bit. It's been in the news this week, the LB 353, the bill that, and I wish they were here, the bill that, it wasn't on behalf of the county that it was introduced by Senator Baker. It was the Trial Lawyers Association of Nebraska that approached the two lobbyists, one of them being former Senator Wesley, approached Baker about it. And Baker, when we were out that meeting the other night on Wednesday night, he came and visited with me. He says, I'm going to plan on introducing this tomorrow. And I says, well, it's up to you. I says, we have you have our thoughts. He says, well, he says, the only reason I'm going to is, he says, because if I don't, there will be people introducing that bill. Okay? Yeah, that's his comment. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it was not introduced on behalf of the county. Went online and looked, and it was originally going to be, it was put into the Judiciary Committee, which Baker is on and Chambers on, and Epke's leading that. Chambers already filed a motion the same day then that he wants it in the governmental one. So I don't know why he's been doing that, I guess. So we will try and keep on top of that. I probably will visit with Larry Dix about that too. I don't know what everybody else's thoughts.
What is 353? What did they introduce?
It's LB 353.
But what's
it in? It's a bill that basically would allow the state to borrow any judgment, and it takes the wording out, so it doesn't have to be a state judgment. Any judgment could then borrow all of the necessary funds, or I don't know how it's all worded. It's really worded.
The Attorney General's opinion was, because it was wasn't a tort claims under Nebraska law, it was a 1983 action under federal law, therefore the treasurer could not lend on that basis because the statute didn't allow for it. So what they're trying to do is add any claim. Uh-huh. So it could come from Afghanistan, for cripe's sakes. And we could borrow, or a county or a subdivision could borrow. And again, what's rather bothersome to me is now it's like if we weren't a deep enough pocket before, we become deeper. And why didn't they say we'll only lend up to 10%? That may have helped us with negotiation or something. And again, I'm talking like we're in closed session, but gosh darn it, you know. He's got so many people stirring the pot.
That's what we voiced to Baker at the meeting last week too, is that was our fear, is it's a never ending pot of money now.
Yeah.
And who did it? The trial lawyers. They don't care about anybody but themselves. They're looking at getting money in their own pocket, not for a single person.
Yeah, that's why it was the first place you could have done something to limit. You know, and I'm not, you know, again, we're all talking, you know, hopefully Eighth Circuit will see the wisdom and the briefs and say, you know, no. But I'm not blaming Senator Baker, although, again, like you said, be careful who brings you gifts.
Yes.
Yep.
So there's a lot of concerns with it, and I visited with him about all of our concerns, realizing that. But I don't know. He must have got more visits or pressure or something. He didn't say why, but those were the comments he made to me. Then one other thing here, and I don't know if we didn't put it on here or not. Need to visit yet quickly about the zoning board did approve at their public hearing the fertilizer, special use fertilizer application out here at Holt Myers, and we need to set a date for our public hearing on that. But since then, I don't know if Amanda's visited with you yesterday.
Yeah, we visited last night for two hours.
One of the neighbors out there, Jacobson, has filed a letter that when they put in the seed tubes, that should have required a special use permit, and it was not. So,
I would just tell you, and we talked about that. Those are two completely separate issues. You need to go ahead and set your hearing on the anhydrous deal as you normally would. And again, that guy's not going to be happy no matter what happens, and he's got every right to object if they're doing something that is not in accordance with our zoning deals. it looks like it's a pretty simple fix, but it may require a special permit. Well, okay. Go file it. Gary will approve it this, or Terry will approve it this time.
Yes, I will.
So they did approve it. They approved a, and I don't, it, a special use permit is for two anhydrous tanks out there. And the 30,000 gallons each, I think.
So is it coming on our agenda in 2 weeks or when?
No.
Coming
I think
on?
We got a question, and I think we should go into closed session for it because it could, it goes back to a past deal, and I'm concerned.
Okay. We have a request to go into closed session?
For litigation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
It's already on your agenda, so you're okay. But, I mean, you have to make your little announcement.
Okay.
Time and all that.
Entertain a motion to go into closed session at 12:17 on the clock, necessary for the protection of public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of the individual.
Couldn't get better.
So I'll move.
And Gary has moved, and who's seconded?
12:17.
Second.
Tiemann seconded. Vote? 6-0.
Let me catch up to you because I'm.
Okay. We're
on record now.
12:28 coming out of closed session. Entertain a motion to come out of closed session.
So moved.
Motion by Lytle.
Second.
Second by Tiemann. Vote 6-0 in favor. We're coming out of closed session and we're going to set our public hearing date for the special use permit by Holt Myers and others on a fertilizer facility. North of Ellis. We're going to set that at 9:45.
9:45 on the 15th.
Do we want it at February 15th, or do we want it a little later so we can be done with the rest of our meeting?
What else do we have that day?
Well, right now, I don't have much. We're going to have a public hearing for the 1 and 6 prior to that, and then the bid openings for fuel at 9:15, and so...
Maybe right. That's all right.
I never know.
I don't know either.
It's closer. How much
we're going to have on the agenda. Like this agenda here is as long as we've had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's right. A long time.
Pretty good for them.
You have to wait.
Well, no. Our public hearing will be at 9:45. Yeah. If somebody else
that's what I mean.
Have to wait.
Somebody else will have to wait.
Yeah. Let's leave it at 9:45.
Okay.
What was the date?
February 15th.
February 15th.
It'll be advertised, and that's when we'll have our public hearing.
I've got some.
Valentine Day, man.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I remind you of the Engage. You'll be getting them,
work,
or not? Yeah.
The Engage annual meeting and banquet. Oh, that's something we need to do because at that annual meeting, we've always in the past we've designated who will be the person to vote on that because sometimes they've made the chairman. I mean, no, we just need to have it. So we need that on next agenda too.
So how do you want that listed?
I don't know. However you list it, you have to go back and look. We always designate
approved voting member from
the approved voting
member. Okay.
Member for Engage annual meeting.
Right.
Yeah. There you go. It's more of a Okay.
And that's a legal thing.
That's the 15th.
15th too.
But that's at night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? If not, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion by Tiemann, second by Lytle. Vote.
We're going. Terry.
Hold it.
Terry.
Hold it. Whoa. Got too many. You can't leave. We don't have enough people here voting in favor. They change your vote. Never mind. They change your vote.
They're in a Christmas. Look at the Christmas tree.
Somebody changed my vote.
I bet it was Lytle.
Okay. Now what?
You want to go. Okay. 5-6-0 in favor of adjourning. Thank you much.
Hey, Terry.
I'm going to shut this off.
Better shut that off first.
Shut it off, yeah.
When's the...